Tonight's episode of Heavy Meta is brought to you by Face to Face Games.
No. Ladies and gentlemen. For what?
Welcome to Heavy Meta, your source for magic news, entertainment, and comedy.
What is up, you foxes and coxes? I'm Kevy Metal.
And I'm Raging Gumby.
And tonight on Heavy Meta, TSG went to film school, so he ain't here. So we got us JR the Time Elemental to fill in for him.
Hey, guys.
Say hi, JR.
Hey, Nanu Nanu. How's it
going? Nanu Nanu.
Oh, God. That brought back memories. Nanu Nanu.
How you guys doing? Thanks for having me on. It's like the surprise podcast appearance. So I'm just hanging out.
Thanks for being on, because nobody wants to listen to Kevy and I just bullshit for 4 hours.
Or I'll try to help keep things on the rails as well as TSG does.
That's hard to do.
Yeah. It's hard to do. Yeah, no one else can do it like him. But thanks, guys.
Hell no. No, man, thanks for coming on. We always enjoy fucking bullshitting with you and having you on. And it worked out fucking perfect. Like, TSG has some film school shit going on and had to fucking last second drop out. And we're like, shit, we got a problem. Like, we might not be able to do this with just me and David because, you know, like, that would probably either turn into a screaming match or get boring real fast.
Depending on both. On how much David is drinking, he might get mean. He might start getting mean.
I apologize. All right.
He might get abrasive and aggressive. But I hit up JR. I was like, man, any chance you're not doing shit right now? And he's just like, fuck yeah, I'm not doing shit right now. Let's do this. So it worked out fucking perfectly.
Yeah, I might have to. I apologize. I might have to duck off if I get a work call, but.
Making money. He was sitting around basically making a fuck ton of money, and then he was just all, yeah, I mean, I'm not really doing anything. I fucking, you know, I make money whenever I want. So
just don't use my real name. Don't use my real name, please.
I've been here since 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, you guys have the West Coast edge on me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a couple brews tonight, but, you know, I'm technically on duty, so can't really...
We'll catch up real quick.
Yeah, I think that's half the problem. You know, we cast the people from the fucking East Coast. Dave and I both assume we need to get off work and get drunk as fast as we can so we can catch up. And then usually we blow right past whoever we're talking to, and we're at like full tilt drunk in an hour, and that's when we start yelling about shit.
Yeah, that's why two thirds of the time I've guested on a cast, I've actually ended up passing out on the cast. Like, only the first time I was on Brainstorm Brewery, I didn't pass out. So, but otherwise,
we got that one for you. You got that one going for you.
We have a long-standing history. We have a long-standing history of making our guests pass out, or at least not remember the cast the next day.
Wasn't the last time you were on here that you and I sat there trying to figure out after the cast had to end? We're like, let's fucking get on the call again.
Yeah.
And we're both drunk, and then you just, I think, fell asleep at some point. I stopped trying.
Yeah, I would have forgotten about that, except I had, like, a fragment of Skype there. And then I was like, oh, my God, I was on Heavy Meta, and I think I, like, passed out, like, an hour into it. That was so lame. But then I listened to it, and I was like, oh, no, man, you're pretty, like, you know.
You're all right. Fine.
Yeah, it's fine. It's good.
while we were trying to talk to you, there was also fucking BoostCube, and we were all trying to somehow use the internet, and none of us were very good at it, so we couldn't get any of the calls to work, and then finally we all gave up. You passed out. BoostCube and I just were like, oh, you know what, fuck this. It's been like an hour since the cast ended, and we still can't get a call to fucking work, so we might as well just call it quits at this point.
I was definitely shit wasted by the end of that episode, though. Like, in the Twitter hole, like, people would ask questions. I think, like, Jack LaCroix asked a question, and I was like, hey, you don't even need to know that. Fuck you.
And this is why we love you.
Alcohol's fun.
Man, and it's great, too, because it's like, you know, we got him on as a TSG kind of replacement for the night, but I feel like he's just going to be another David or Kevy. once he gets a little more to drink, and then it's just three of us yelling at each other or at the world.
Yeah, but I'll try and keep it on low today, since we don't have TSG to wrangle us in. I won't go through a couple bottles of champagne or anything and start yelling at people.
Yeah, just go through one and then start drinking tequila or something.
that's what I did that one night. Is drank two bottles of champagne and then started taking shots, and by the end of it I was just yelling and telling everybody what to do.
That's what I'm saying. If you cut out the middle, man, if you cut out the middle bottle of champagne and just drink a bottle of champagne and go straight to tequila shots, you should be fine.
I think I do have some tequila around here. Let me look at my mini fridge.
Oh, this is gonna be awesome.
Oh no, I got something much better. Oh shit. Uh-oh. I got much less of it now.
Uh-oh. That's how we start the cast.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm so sad.
Oh, shit!
I'm so sad.
What'd you spill?
Oh, triple distilled, 140 proof Irish poteen.
Oh, man. Like Irish poutine? Like fucking, just you spilt your French fries, your Irish French fries and gravy all over the place, or what?
Oh, God, this stuff is so good. it smells. Like, it's so powerful.
Probably smells really good.
Oh, it does smell really good.
Yeah, I can smell it. I can smell it from here.
I think my cat's going to get fucked up right now.
Yes! No, your cat's big enough. Uh-oh. It can handle it.
I know. It might get aggressive. I would be afraid. I would start getting nervous. Like,
it's going to eat me.
Yeah, David and his fucking house puma are going to end up getting a fist fight later.
All right. Hey, I'll be back in like 2 minutes. I got to go like rinse myself off.
All right.
Wait, you don't want to smell yourself this whole time?
It's not that I don't want to smell it. It's that it's going to start getting sticky.
It's going to start burning into your skin.
I like the fact that on the bottom of the bottle says, warning, this spirit drink is highly flammable. So I also might die and catch on fire.
Yeah, it's going to end up burning your skin. I love it.
I'll be right back.
All right. So, while David is fucking rinsing himself, we got fucking all sorts of shit to talk about tonight on the fucking show notes that even though fucking TSG had film school shit to do and couldn't make it, he of course is the gentleman that always brings us show notes. And then as I was scanning through them, I was like, man, TSG's probably going to be the only one that cares about half of this shit.
Yeah.
But
this is the exact kind of shit where on Money Draft, I'm just like, yeah, I'm glad, like, we don't have to talk about this shit on Money Draft. like some of it, like, I do have some opinions about some things, but...
And see, that's where I land on it, too, is, like, there's a lot of this shit. I do have opinions on them, but at the same time, I could take it or leave it. And that's why I'm glad when we have, like, somebody to talk about it that knows what the fuck we're talking about.
There's some subjects, like, unless you're aiming for, like, this is the only Magic content that your listener listens to every week, maybe... Like, there's some topics where it's, like, you're just going to have – it's not that complicated of a thing. You're just going to have, like, the same, you know, like, the same opinion.
Same opinions that everybody else does.
Yeah. So yeah, why even talk about it?
That's very true. Well, I don't know. I think I definitely agree with you to an extent. But then there's also those times – and that's one of the things I do love about this cast is that we just kind of bounce around on everything, you know. Especially, like, when Maddie's on, the finance thing comes in a little bit more. But it's not like we're a finance cast. And, you know, but there's the Vorthos side of things. There's the fucking, like, actually playing Magic. And then there's the shit that has nothing to do with Magic. And I like bouncing around a lot of stuff. But I find, like – What cracks me up is there's subjects that we don't really care about and don't really need to cover, but we can still spend 2 hours on it.
Yeah.
For some dumb reason. And then we're like, at the end of the show, we're like, oh man, there was so much more relevant shit that we needed to talk about. But we spent all our time talking about a comic book about magic.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you just have to find your thing. Like, people don't, you know, like, I'm sure people don't turn it, like, listen to Money Draft to, like, get fucking hardcore magic strategy.
I do.
Oh, yeah. Is that wrong?
That's why. Yeah, that's why I'm probably not a good magic player.
Oh, God, I took a shot of this. It's going to be a good night.
Ooh, all right.
I don't have to work tomorrow, so you know what? Fuck it.
Oh, man.
I'm gonna take a picture of this, and I'll send you guys.
That really fucking stinks.
That you, what? That I don't have to work tomorrow?
Tomorrow? I have to work
or
tomorrow.
Or the day after?
I have to work the day after. I actually think I get off early on fucking Friday. My boss is like, well, the rest of the world gets off on Friday, but I'm not going to let that happen. So maybe I'll try to let you guys off a little early.
how
but whatever.
You have to get up early tomorrow. It's better than nothing. It's a bad day, but whatever, man. Doing it.
JR's a fucking trooper because he's like, fuck yeah, Heavy Meta. I'm going to come hang out with those guys.
Yeah, man.
What a mistake.
Crush tomorrow morning.
Did someone say steak?
I'm gonna have to figure out how to rework this shit. If I do end up getting that other fucking job, then I'm gonna be getting up and going to work a lot earlier. I'll be able to get off earlier and, you know, like do things in the afternoon, but I'm gonna be going to work like 2 hours earlier than I normally do, so that means I'm gonna have to figure out, like, you know, have a good podcast and then fucking just go to bed instead of have a good podcast and then stay up doing some other dumb shit, drinking for like 2-3 more hours. I'm going to have to start going to bed sooner. Not into the idea.
Yeah.
But I'm whatever. Such a
waste of fuck. I'm so glad I don't have to drive anywhere. Like, basically, I'm just like, yeah, just having to commute like a half hour, like a half hour, even like an hour, 90 minutes. Just, it's the worst.
See, it's funny because, like, you know, coming from somewhere like, you know, where you're at, like, you know, that's a normal thing for people. Like, oh, I got to get up and go to work, and I've got a half-hour commute is like a short commute. And then the people that actually commute to work spend an hour or so on the road. And it's like, you know, where we're at, like, David's job is, like, on the other side of the valley from his house. But it's, like, you know, what, 10 minutes to get to work?
20.
20 for you?
It takes me 20 because I work way out on the range.
How fast do you drive out there?
Well, most of the time I'm going between 45 and 55, but the problem is I have to stop at two different gates and security gates, and a lot of the times that's where it takes me 20 minutes, like, because there's a good 5-10 minutes at least at the gate before I can get through it. Like right now, it's not too bad. When school's out, it's not too bad, but when school is in session and everybody's going to work, you can get, like, backed up to the point where if you come at the wrong time, it'll take you 20 minutes before you get through the gate. I've just figured out when to go, and also I kind of cheat at the back gate. I can bypass most of the line by going down this one little side road. So they have to let me in at the stop sign.
I know exactly. Like, you're talking about, like, coming from, like, Pierce.
From Pierce, yeah, exactly.
Yep. I know exactly what you're talking about.
So I'll just cut across the desert and then turn onto that road and then bypass most of the traffic, so.
Hell yeah, that's a good way
But anyway, it takes me about 20 minutes
but
on
like
average.
With me, it's, I'm like the other end of town from my job, and it takes me, what, 6 minutes to get to work from when I leave my fucking house? And then now I'm like, oh man, I'm gonna have to actually commute to work if I get the fucking railroad job, which means I gotta go to Trona, which is like the next town over, and it's like 30 minutes away. But it's still like, that's a normal fucking commute for a lot of people. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I gotta go to a different town? This is fucking crazy. But it's worth it.
Yeah. That's part of the reason why shit was just like so chaotic in Vegas. Like, it on the map, it like seriously looked like close. Like, it looked like you just, like, drive there in 10 minutes, and you'd be there, but between, like, parking and, yeah.
Yeah, like, every time we'd leave the house and go down, like, to the strip for, like, to the venue or to go to anywhere on the strip, it was, I mean, not only like, the getting the people together to get in the fucking car, which is also, like, that's another 20-minute excursion to get, like, four or five people in the same car together at the same time. And then to get to where you're going, you know, down on the strip or to the venue, find a place to park or pay for parking and all that shit, it take you fucking 45 minutes to get from one place to the other, and it's only, like, fucking 4 or 5 miles away. Yeah.
There's just, like, a minimum, like, at minimum, you're just going to waste 25 minutes, like, between, like, parking in the garage and, you know.
Then walking to where you're getting to.
Walking to, like, through the casino to where you're going, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, all right, I guess we should probably
talk about things besides Vegas.
Yeah, I missed where this conversation came from, so I was like, I don't really know where we're going or what we're talking about, so I don't want to interrupt or nothing.
But we don't really know either. I mean, I was gonna start bringing up like the topics that TSG fucking gave us.
Yeah, we might as well. If you were going to commute, maybe some people are commuting to San Diego to go to the Comic-Con and
beautiful.
Less than gorgeous, exclusive black-on-black planeswalkers. But I personally am not a fan of these. Like, just aesthetically, they don't look that great. Like, I've seen them in people's cubes, and they're hard to read. These ones are interesting, and I'm wondering whether they're going to be highly sought after because they're double-sided. Like, it's black-on-black, double-sided planeswalkers. And on top of that, they are not doing like a gimmicky like Garrick's axe or whatever with it. This time they're going to have an art book, which Mike Linneman of all people, so he knows his stuff, saying it's going to be pretty sweet. And from what I've seen, it is. The real question is, like, does anybody really like these things? Because all of the people that posted on our Facebook page, because we asked, you know, what people thought about them, pretty much it was almost unanimous that people thought they were awful, that they were ugly, and on top of that, did not like how exclusive they were. But the general consensus was if they could get a set of them, they would, and then they would sell them. So there has to be people out there that want these things.
I think that's what it comes down to. I think it was a cool idea. Like, aesthetically, yeah, I've seen them, and they're a bitch to read. They're a pain in the ass to play with. They are, you know, really exclusive, and I think when they first came out with the idea, it's like, oh, those look really cool. I like the black on black thing. That's fucking awesome. And I think at that point they should have been done with it and moved on to another, like, you know, crazy different art scheme or color scheme or whatever they want to do. That's fine. But the fact that they keep doing them again and again is kind of, it's diluting what, you know, it was cool the first time, and now it's kind of everybody's over it because they don't have, like, they don't have the functionality. They literally are just a collector's item. And then especially, like, there's the fact that, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of collectors that want them because they are a collector's item. But it's not like, oh, man, these are sweet. I want to fucking have these as the crown jewel of my collection. It's like, oh, these are fucking expensive and rare, so I should collect them.
Yeah,
but
it's
like, you almost feel like you're supposed to. You know, that people feel, the collectors even, feel like they're supposed to collect them because they're kind of being told to because they're rare. Not because it's like, oh, this is an awesome thing that I want to have. It's like, oh, well
I mean,
a
lot of collectors,
I should get them if I can,
are only going to collect it because it is rare. There's a lot of people out there that, you know, for a long time, I actually, that was the one thing in Magic that I actually collected, which was Planeswalkers. I got a playset of all the different types of Planeswalkers. And not, like, each different art or whatever else, but if there was a Johnny Vengeance, and I would try and vary it, because there's, you know, there was like the dual decks, then there was a promo, and then the regular Johnny Vengeance. So I would have one of each, and then like another one of whichever art I wanted. And like Liliana Vest, there was like a book promo, the dual deck, and then a normal, and so on and so forth. So I would try and have a playset of each, which just quickly just became unreasonable. And I stopped, and since then I've started, you know, like trading off or selling the extra ones, because it's just, it's not necessary, and stuff like this just makes it almost impossible financially to just make those. But a lot of people with a lot more disposable income do collect stuff like that and would want at least one for their collection, if not one of each. So
I tend to be a natural collector, but a long time ago I've just decided that certain things you don't need to collect. And there are a lot of things in Magic that, like, people are collecting, per se, and I just find silly. Like, even, like, the miscuts, like, uniqueness, it's just like an artificial standard of uniqueness. Like, I'd rather buy, like, you know, Jesus's rookie coin from Byzantium from, like, you know, 700 AD, like, than, like, an expensive miscut. It's just, like, everything is a one-of-a-kind, really. It's like, if you take a shit in the morning, like, that's a one-of-a-kind shit. Like, there's never going to be another shit.
They're like snowflakes. Yeah. You heard it here first, people. JR says shits are like snowflakes.
Like, a card, like, has a crimp on it, and you're just like, all right, this is a one-of-a-kind. So now it's just like...
You're like, hey, Apple, that's binder ring. Yeah, that's just a fucked up binder ring from somebody's trade binder. But he's like, yeah, but there's only one of them with it right here.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, there's certain ones where, like, I can see the appeal. Like, if it was, like, some sort of, like, ink issue where it came
I have seen a good one before. Like, the one that I almost bought was a Pyroclasm, because it's kind of hard to pimp out. You have to go, like, the foil 7th edition. But I saw an Ice Age one where there was, like, a color misprint where there was like an orange band across the whole card, so it kind of looked like a Mark Rothko kind of overall thing. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, and that's what I'm talking about. Like, I can see paying more for misprints that it actually enhances the card, like, not just that it's unique, but that it also looks cool. Like, there was quite a few, and I'm trying to remember which set it was, but I think it was Cons, actually. There were a number of cards that had these crazy ink issues. I still have a few that I pulled. One's like an act of treason where up near the top right, it just looks like all of the inks got mixed together and made like this crazy swirl up in the top right corner. It's like that.
Oh, yeah.
On top of it being unique, it actually looks cool. So I could see paying a little bit more for that. Yeah. But for like crimps or like actual miscuts, I don't understand paying, you know, $5 instead of 15 cents for a card that you'll never play.
That brings up the, like, and I saw, like, I don't know the extent of it, but I saw something come up on Twitter, it was a couple weeks ago, and, like, a few different people were talking about these, like, I want to say, maybe it was, like, even when the Modern Masters packs were coming out, and people were finding the discard blanks there, like, there, and people were just all, and like, it blew me away when people were talking about how much people were paying for those. That it's literally just like a fucking blank card. Like, it was supposed to be thrown away, but people are like, oh, that's super fucking special, I need to fucking buy it. It's like, why? Especially like in a hobby where, like, where you already are... I mean, I get it. If you've got the disposable income, fucking do whatever you want to with it. I mean, people could gold plate their toilets if they want to. But, like, in a game or hobby that is already... Exactly, they're unique shit. But no, in a hobby that's already fucking expensive to play, because, like, you know, you've got to buy all these fucking cards in four ofs a lot of times that are fucking way overpriced because of their rarity and shit like that to be able to play with. I mean, not just be like, oh, cool, I have this. You know, oh, cool, I have a play set of Tarmogoyfs that I'm not going to do anything with. But to, like, you know, I need to go play tournaments and shit with these. You already have, like, that premium on it. So, like, some of these things that people are paying outlandish fucking money for just because they're fucking special is just, like, I don't know. I mean, I get it to an extent. I mean, there's certain cards I will pay a lot of fucking money for because, you know, I got Beta Bolts in my shit and I could play Lightning Bolt for a lot cheaper than that. So, I mean, I guess I'm guilty of it to an extent, but like, I don't know, with like the black on black Planeswalkers, I think if anything, they should have just gone, you know, maybe we do white on white this next year. And then maybe the year after that, we do some other weird fucking foily shit where, you know, we do all the, like, do the regular art, you know, like the regular coloring and shit like that. But then just do all the fucking text in foil and like reverse the foil process or something like that. Like, make them special. That's fine. Make them collector's editions. But the black on black thing, it's like they did it and then they did it again and now they're doing it again and it's starting to get old. And the amount of money that the things are going for, it's like, fuck, dude, what is the point?
Yeah, well, I mean, they're not worried about the money. That's the thing. Like, when Wizards does stuff like this, they try and not, you know, take into account the secondary market. But, you know, but like you said, the first point, that is something that they should you know, take into account, because they want to be producing special stuff that people are actually interested in. I think they got the point with the axes, because a lot of people complained right. about those things. So now they're going to an art book, which I think is much, much better. You know, it's much more interesting. Like, you get backstory with some of the planeswalkers and how they started, and beautiful art. It's much easier to carry around than a giant Nerf axe. You know, so obviously they are listening to feedback. So hopefully they get enough pushback, at least on the way that they're doing this, like the black on black, like, yeah, do specialized, you know, Comic-Con exclusive planeswalkers. I mean, there are a lot of people that do take issue with it, but that's simply because they want them and it costs too much for them. And there's always right. going to be those things, like, so I try not to shit on something simply because it's something I want and can't afford, because there would right. be a lot of things I'd be complaining about. But for the most part, you know, people like the idea of these planeswalkers. They just don't like the black on black, which I can understand after yeah. seeing them and playing with them. They're a pain in the ass, and it really doesn't showcase mm-hmm. the art very well.
No, it's just, it looks like garbage. Like, I've always complained about this. It's just like this comic book fetish where it's like people who enjoy comic books have this idea in their mind that, like, black on black means fancy and means nice. Maybe once it was like right. cool, but it's not actually good. Like, it's just like,
well, and maybe even at that, though, like, you know, maybe that being like, it is at their Comic-Con exclusives, maybe that's the whole point of it. They're
yeah,
like,
but see,
we're targeting those people at that event.
The problem know? With that is when you're taking the comic stuff, like, that art was pretty much made for that. So it looks better
right,
when it's
right.
black on black.
Then just like
now you're taking yeah. like this colorful, yeah. beautiful artwork that somebody did, and then you're just basically blackwashing it and putting
right.
like a few hints of color on there, and it just completely kills the art. Like, basically mm-hmm. you have a shadow that's slightly lighter than the darkness behind it, and then a part of their color, which is still muted, is on there. And it just
right.
doesn't look good. Whereas, like, the black-on-black comic art, generally it's made in the understanding that it's going to be black-on-black, so it shows up and is much more stylized for that. And
that I definitely can agree with.
And on top of that, they just keep doing the same thing. Like, if they want
right.
to maintain
that's
interest,
my biggest gripe.
Yeah, and I totally agree with it. They need to...
I mean, we could go down the road of, like, they could have even, you know, they could have done different art for those planeswalkers exclusively for those. That was made, like you said, like, made to be put black on black. That's going to look cooler that way. And maybe it would have come out better.
I think if they did it in such a way like that... Then they would be more successful. But because they use the
I
same
think so,
art,
but I think that they should just move past the black on black thing regardless.
I mean,
that's a way that you could fix the problem if you wanted to continue to do the black on black thing. But I mean, there's so many other things out there. I mean, Wizards is pretty good at exploring design space. Well, they could do it graphically too, you know, and move on from the black on black planeswalkers and do, like, you know, like I said, there's plenty of other options out there to make them special for, you know, as these Comic-Con fucking, you know, promos or whatever. But, you know, just move away from the black-on-black thing. Because of, like you said, the resistance that the community is giving, it's like, you know, okay, we're kind of sick of it. Like, I mean, of course, people are going to want them because they're super exclusive. But, you know, if you look at the percentage of people that want them just because they're super exclusive and people that want them because they're black-on-black and it looks cool, you're going to find a lot more people that want them just because they're exclusive, and it doesn't matter what you do, as long as it looks decent, they're still going to want them. And so you could explore a lot more space with the art and shit like that if you just went a different direction. I think they need to be done with it. Hopefully, after this one, they'll be done with the black-on-black thing and move on.
I mean, if they get enough negative feedback, they definitely will. So I think that people need to, you know, not, like, beat down their door and, you know, go with torches, but they should definitely
yeah.
people should definitely send them, say, like, hey, we want something new, we want something, you know, nicer, something more appealing, and you know, I think that would be a great way for the community to get this changed, because from what I can tell, everybody that I've ever talked to, everybody that commented on our Facebook page, they all said the same thing, that they don't like them, that they're ugly, that but if they could get a hold of them, they obviously would, but most of them would just do it to sell them to the collectors
right.
that just want them because of their rare. So, Yeah, I think they definitely need to do something new. I mean, they don't even have to be Planeswalkers. I think that they will always be Planeswalkers, and that makes sense to me because that's the most iconic type of card. That's the most popular type of card, and that's what they want people to be getting the idea of, because a lot of people that don't play Magic are going to see these or get a hold of these because they're going to the Comic-Con, and, you know, that's what the game is about. You're supposed to be a Planeswalker, so... They just need to change it up. They need to make it much more fresh and to me appealing.
They need new lands, black on black lands.
Black on black lands. They just need to start handing out those foil discard cards and everybody would be happy.
Yeah, everybody would go apeshit.
Exactly. Just black on black discard, no white lettering anymore.
Yeah.
It's just embossed. There you go.
Yeah. Or no, it just says discard in foil.
Yeah, there you go.
Every card is in Russian from now on.
Exactly.
Oh man. So
well, and then basically, like, I mean, that kind of answers the question too. Like, is it worth buying these off eBay for fucking more than $300?
I don't even. Nah. I wouldn't pay $300.
Well,
for
it. I mean, and it depends. I mean, I get that's just a simple fucking finance question. It's like, depends on how much people are offering for them. So if you could get it for $300 and people want. Them or buying them for $500, sure.
Well, yeah, I mean that's an easy question. I think the heart of that question is are these things worth it to you to get a hold of for greater than $300?
And it's also like, is it worth your time to flip it? Like, if you could like clear even after shipping and it like $50, right. Like, is that worth like going to the fucking post office and staying there? Like,
yeah, I think like, very few people actually put the time into thinking about that. There's a lot of people out there that try and they work really hard to make pennies. And in my opinion, to, you know, make money. I've made more money in Magic simply by just dumb luck or you know, putting a bulk rare in a big box, and then, you know, 2 years down the line, all of a sudden it's found a home or a use or a card that's broken it. And I'm like, oh, I used to have a bunch of those. Go back. I'm like, oh man, this like 50-cent rare that I just never moved because it was bulk is now a freaking $12 card. Then it's worth my time to move
Speaking of bulk, I had this wonderful idea the other day, how I'm going to find my niche in the Magic finance community. I'm going to start aggressively acquiring bulk and then burning it. Like, well, not just bulk, like, you know, cheaper cards. I'm going to aggressively acquire it, burn it, so that, like, I have the only copies of this shit, and then it'll, like, go up in price. Instead of worrying about reprints to bring fucking rare cards down, I'm going to take all the cards that are plentiful, and I'm going to destroy them like the fucking U.S. Treasury. And then I'm going to be the only one that holds the key anymore.
I mean,
I already had that idea, though. I was going to, like...
Oh, damn it.
All of, like, you know, in Germany in, like, the 20s when they had, like, hyperinflation and they had, like, you know, like, $500 billion notes and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
If you buy all of those up now and then, like, burn, like, 95% of them, the ones that are left are, like, valuable again.
They're going to be rare. They're going to be rare and sought after fucking things, just like the Planeswalkers from Comic-Con. Yeah. I'm telling you.
That's all you have to do is, like, collect things. Like, if you collected, like, every Stradivarius on Earth and then, like, burned every Stradivarius except
burned
for, like...
most of them.
Tell you. And they're already expensive. Like, Jesus.
And well, but then there's also the fact, we're talking Magic cards. These things burn easy. It's not like you got to spend a lot of resources to fucking, you know...
To be fair, Stradivariuses are made out of wood. They would burn fairly easy as well.
Pretty easy too. But I don't have that kind of fucking investment capital. I'm talking... Yeah, I'm just,
I don't think it'll work out.
I think you'd actually get murdered if you started burning Stradivariuses. Throw that out there. I don't think that's a good plan.
I think I'd rather just buy all the copies of Malignus that exist and then fucking light them on fire, except for two, and then sell those.
Oh, and then right before you sell them, he sees a reprint.
Yeah, no shit. That's the way it works. I'm like, God damn it, I gotta burn more cards. But see, I can heat my home at the same time. I've got a fireplace. So it's all value.
It's all value. All right,
so... off from that topic, what do we got? The fucking Pro Tour Magic Origins changes.
Yeah. Like, I'm excited about all of these. Yeah, all the different rules changes. I think that these are awesome. I mean, I guess we should go over them for the few people that probably haven't heard. Like, starting with Origins, it's only going to happen at Pro Tour Origins. They're going to have a new mulligan rule, which if you mulligan on your – whichever mulligan it is, it happens no matter what. So if you mull down to 5 or 6 or whatever, after you look at your hand, you get a scry 1. So you get a look at your hand, you know, whatever it is that it's lacking. Like, maybe you wouldn't normally keep that 6 because it's just too risky, because it's like 5 lands and no action. And then you scry, you see a good spell on curve, so you go, okay, it's not going to be too bad. So now mulliganing is a lot less distasteful, because a general rule that people like to go off of is like 1 scry is generally considered worth half a card. So it's kind of like mulliganing is you're going down half a card now rather than
like
a full card.
Like a half a step instead of a full.
Yeah, yeah. And I personally really like it. There's some people that are trying to say, you know, oh, well, with Delver it's busted, which is complete shit. They're still down a card, and it's only effective for Delver if they are on the draw. I mean, it's just there's very, very, very
such a small fucking, like,
I mean, it only affects Delver if they're on the play. Excuse me. It only affects Delver if they're on the play, because then they don't get a draw. So they scry, they see they have an instant or a sorcery on top. They can keep it there. Then they can play their turn 1 Delver. They're guaranteed to flip. But in any format where Delver is a thing, most decks are well positioned to take care of it, because it's a known entity that decks are trying to flip Delver on turn 1. So, and that, it only affects them on the play. They're still down a card, and there's no guarantee that they're going to hit an instant or a sorcery on the top of their deck. So, it's not like guaranteeing a turn 1 Delver flip all the time. So,
basically, the way it works is if you mull down, you get to basically, I mull the 6, and then I can scry, and then decide whether I want to keep that. Or
you get a look at your hand and then scry.
Right. So I look at my hand and then I scry, and then I get to decide whether I still want to mulligan or if I want to keep
scry,
that.
You can put the card on the top or the bottom, and then you can make the decision to keep or to go down. And if you go down, you get a scry again.
Right. Okay.
So I personally I think it's awesome. I think that there'll be a lot less feel bads of, you know, I had to mull down to 5 or 4 and had a crappy hand and never, you know, drew out of it.
This reminds me of, like, the casual rules. Like, you know, we'll do that all the time while we're sitting here playing, like, especially with, like, Daniel. Fucking draw his cards, and he'll look at the top card and be like, is this even worth fucking playing, or should we just move on? And, you know, it's great for us to, you know, save time and shit like that, and that's exactly what's happening
here. Yeah,
well,
and I think that's, honestly, it's because most people do stuff like that when they're playing casual Magic, and so maybe somebody was smart enough to go, well, if everybody does this, and...
Then it's still competitive, right?
Well, it's not, you know, not just that it's competitive, but people are just doing it naturally, and it makes things less feel bad for them and more fun. Mm-hmm. So why not test it out, see how useful it is in constructed Magic? I personally think it's a great rule. I think it'll help. It'll, you know, make people feel better about mulliganing. People will keep, really aggressive, you know, speculative hands, because going down a card in a tournament, that's a big deal. Like, you lose a full card, which is most of the time it's a very big deficit to come back from. And most of the time, when you mold like 2 cards down and your opponent keeps 7, you're very small percentage of chance to win that.
Unless you have you're already in a good matchup and you drew the nut on 5, then
it's not impossible. I've won a couple mold of 5s. I'm not very many. It is possible, like you said, if you're in a very, very beneficial, like, optimal matchup, or your opponent keeps a risky 7 and they, you know, draw poorly. There's any number of things that can happen, but I think you'll see a lot less of these sketchy keeps. And even you'll see a lot more of people mulling to 6 that have much more competitive hands against the opponents that kept 7, because they're able to, you know,
dig towards a land if that's what they're needing, or, you know, ditch a land if that's what they don't need, or keep an action spell on top so that way they know that they're going to be able to interact. So I just think that this rule is very quickly going to become, you know, standard. Like, it's going to be...
standard, yeah. I think so, too.
They're just going to test unless it out with the Pro Tour. Unless there's
something just, like... Right.
Yeah. Which
unless I mean, it becomes something unforeseen, like, you know, of course there's always that weird unforeseen thing that may end up happening, but I mean, for the most part, it's, I mean, because like ultimately it's going to lead to better games of Magic anyway, which is what, you know, what they're going to want on coverage. They don't want those random shitty games where like, well, that sucked, and that's part of the game, it's variance, and we've all had to play through that, where it's like, you kind of know you're fucked, and this game is not going to go in your favor, but you kind of got to play through it anyway, because you're not totally fucked, so you might as well limp through it for a little while before you decide to concede. It's like, this is going to just make for better games of Magic to play and to watch.
Yeah, I mean, even apart from the coverage thing, like, people play this game to have those interactive games of Magic.
Right.
Like, I've lost, and I've lost in tournaments and not been upset at all because the games were amazing. Like, back and forth, like, I felt like I was advantaged at one point, then I felt like I was, you know, I was the underdog, and then I dug back into it and thought I had a chance, and then got beat at the last second. Like, those are the type, that's the reason why I play this game. It's, like, do I like to win? Yes. Do I try and win whenever I play? Yes. But if I lose and it was fun and interactive, I still had a great time. I don't have any, like, feel bads about losing. And this will lead to more of those types of games. Less of the, oh, well, my opponent got stuck on two lands, and I completely crushed him, and sweet, I'm going on to the next match. It'll lead to more, you know, interactive, fun games of Magic. Now, certain people, like, we talked about this on the Facebook page as well, asked people how they felt. Most people were very, very supportive. And then there were a few people that are like, I feel like this gives, like, combo decks, like, too much of an advantage. I feel like, and some people were just bluntly honest. They said, I like that, you know, without Descry, because I don't mind beating up people that keep bad hands and getting free wins off them. And this is going to lead to less of that. So, most people, I think, though, are in support of these new rules, and I certainly am.
I definitely like this one.
Yeah, and Jason, did you?
It's definitely going to lead to, like, less feel bads. Like reducing the variance, like, I don't know. I guess,
We got him drunk early, folks.
Yeah, we did. You guys like did the flim flam on me. You realize we're like we're talking about Magic now.
Yeah. All right. So we'll move on to the next rule, and if JR gathers his thoughts about this one, we can come back to it. But the other rule, which has much more impact on the actual coverage. And honestly, I think that this stems from that huge hoopla with Patrick Chapin. Is judges now have the ability to use video review for matches that are on video. So, I mean, I feel like I said this exact same thing. Like, if you already have the video of them doing it, why not utilize it? They do it in other sports, and, you know, regardless of the fact that there's tons of people that aren't on video, like, you're already videotaping this, so if you have the ability to exonerate or, you know, catch a person cheating, use the video. Go back. Figure it out. And it's not just to catch people cheating or to make sure that they weren't cheating. Like, you can also catch, like, problems with the board state. You can go back and figure out exactly what happened, you know, because before this, you know, sometimes the commentators would, you know, hit them up and say, hey, blah, 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 you missed this, you got to correct this, whatever else. But now you can definitively go back, look at what point the board state got screwed up, how it got screwed
right,
up,
right.
Fix it and go back to it, and on top of being able to go, okay, yeah, this, you know, like the whole thing with Chapin. Yes, he fucked up. But he was not cheating. He was not, you know, doing anything wrong. We can go back to that, clearly show that it was known, you know, information. He put the creature in, like, properly, give him a warning, whatever, and move on from there and not turn it into this, like, debacle. So I'm in support of this as well, but I could definitely see more of an argument against this rule than the last one.
Yeah. I can see what you're saying, but like I think you bring up a good point, because it's not just a strictly like to catch cheaters clause, you know, or to clear a cheater's name clause. I mean, it is exactly that. Like there's been plenty of times where it's like, oh shit, Board State got fucked up. Judge, can you come back and try to fix this for us? And then you've got two guys that are, you know, hopefully on the same fair playing field, that are both trying to just fix the problem, and somebody's not trying to game the system. But you have, you know, it's like, judge, shit, we've got a problem. How can we fucking reverse this game state to get back to where we were? And now you can, like you said, look at the tape. It's not just about catching cheaters and stuff. It's like, look at the tape. And I mean, yeah, like, not everybody's on camera, and not everybody's going to have that advantage or disadvantage of like being able to go back and look at the match and see what happened. But I mean, that's just the game by nature, like any other fucking game. Like, you know, they can't go back and look at the tape in a high school football game, but they can in an NFL game, because they had the tape there and then go back and look at it.
Yeah.
There's no reason not to use the evidence available. Like, if, you know, now, it makes me wonder, well, no, I guess that kind of negates it, because you can't have, like, well, that's not even outside assistance. I was going to say, because if somebody's fucking, you know, filming the fucking match, like, if I'm sitting there playing a fucking match against you at fucking F&M or at a fucking GPT, and somebody's standing there with their fucking camera out fucking filming it for some reason, why couldn't you use that fucking footage either? You know, to be like, oh shit, the game's take off fucked up, or this happened, and he's like, well, here, I got the fucking footage of it. Show it to the judge on his phone and see what happens.
Like, yeah, no, I agree. Like, you know, that crazy, ridiculous matchup that I was on camera for, like, if you go back and watch the video, there's like two or three mistakes, mm-hmm. not only that I made, but that my opponent made, and the judges were watching us. Neither of us were trying to cheat. Like, his mistake was, like, he forgot to just, he ultimated a Ugin, which would normally backbreaking, but he could, you know, he drew seven cards, and then he could put seven permanents onto the field just for free, and he never does it, because there's so much crap on the board, and so we already had so many cards in our hand that he'd never put seven permanents onto the field, and I never even thought about it. I was like, whatever, you know, I didn't catch it. I don't think it would have changed the outcome of the match. Yeah, because
you guys were in such a crazy board state
was
anyway.
Ridiculous. Yeah. And there was a number of times where, like, the judges or us were just like, no, this, or trying to remember, or like looking at the bottoms, like, of the you know, not morph creatures, whatever, the manifest creatures, like, which one's which? Like, I had to, like, look, like, what one's a land? I mean, I started separating them. Like, if my opponent was clearly paying attention, he would know, like, if he started killing one of the pile and they were all, like, lands or, you know, spells, he'd be like, this pile's all the creatures. I should target them. You know, it was, like, bad. Mm-hmm. The board state was just ridiculous. So if we had video and we got to one of those points, we could go back and go, okay, well, this is where the confusion happened. You know, then go from there, figure out whether we just move on, it was missed triggers, or whether it was like misrepresentation of the board state and we have to fix it. The video would have helped that. So, you know, I'm in support of this rule, but like I said, I can see arguments against this, like, basically comes down to fairness to the other people playing that don't have video coverage. I personally don't give a shit. Like, if you have it, use it.
Well, and I agree with that. And if that's the only real argument against this, then it's like, but you don't have table judges at every fucking match either, you know. And that's totally fine. So where do you draw the line there? Like, for the basically what I'm saying is that, like, for the naysayers to this rule, which I understand what you're saying, like, it is different treatment than any other match that's going on. But you, like, on feature matches, if I'm not mistaken, they all have table judges sitting right there watching your match. And all of the other matches that are going on in the hall have, you know, judges wandering around, but you don't have a table judge watching your match. So,
yeah, I mean, most of the time you have one judge watching a couple matches in the feature, unless it's like the finals or whatnot. But yeah, no, it is definitely different. I mean, it's definitely they have an advantage having a judge sitting there that they can just turn to, and you know, it is a much different beast. Like when you're sitting there, like if you do something that creates a token, they hand you a token. You know, right. they give you the tokens to use. They have dice there. Now that's only they're only doing that because they want it to look nice for the camera. It's not because right. they want to treat the players there special over everyone else. They just want it to make it look nice for the camera, you know, Star City especially, so they can put their specialized tokens out there, and they have right, their right. playmats out there and don't let you use yours. And that's all just, you know, business reasons why they're doing that.
Right.
And I, like I said, I personally am of the mind, I don't care if you have the coverage for whatever reason, use it. They're videoing it, not mm-hmm. not specifically to for any of this, but to broadcast it to people that want to watch it. But if you already have access to that video and can quickly look at it to, you know, fix some board states or catch somebody doing something they shouldn't or prove somebody accidentally did something, then yeah, you should definitely take advantage of it. So once again, you know, yeah. this is something we could post to see what other people, you know, think of it.
Yeah, we definitely need to post this on the Facebook page.
JR, do you have any specific thoughts on this rule?
No, I mean, I like both of these changes. To go back to the variance one, which I wrote the word variance on the docket. And I was like, yeah, variance. And what I was going to say is, like, there is this line where, like, the fundamental – one of the worst things about Magic is Mana Screw, right? But
right.
do you actually want to eliminate flood. Mana Screw? And I remember, like, I saw, like, Conley at GP Oakland, you know, a couple years ago. And he was talking about, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of his game designing, he was saying, like, you know, some games, I think he was talking about, like, Soulforge at the time, it was like, they want to, like, eliminate Mana Screw. But, you know, at some point, that's just part of the game.
Right.
But definitely, in terms of the Scry rule, I mean, that just... Yeah, I mean it's complex.
Yeah, because I don't think that really... I don't think that, like, eliminates Mana Screw or Flood. It just yeah. it makes it less naturally occurring.
Yeah, it mitigates, you know what I mean? It. Like the only downside, mm-hmm. it's like it's a little more complexity, so that when you're teaching someone the game, it's like, you know, another rule. But aside from right. that, it's a net gain.
Yeah, I think so.
In terms of the covered stuff, I don't know. This is the kind of stuff we're on Money Draft where like if I don't have a strong opinion, we're just all just like, all right, we're not gonna talk about
you're
it.
You're just like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
No, and that's fair. If you don't have a strong opinion about that, that's fine. Like, I get, you know, I think, you know, David and I are in support of using the coverage. I can see where some people don't like the idea of using it because it separates the feature match people from the rest of the people. But at the same time, I feel like they're already separated anyway because they're on camera. They have a fucking a judge right there readily available. And, I mean, you could go the other alternative, which is like, oh, all right, fine. So we've got to have a table judge at every table, and everybody's fucking, like, the price tag for a GP is going to be ridiculous for the amount of judges they have to hire. So I like, you know, like from what David said, if you've got the fucking the coverage there, you might as well use it. And, you know, that's about it. But I'm definitely curious to see what other people think, like, on the, you know, we'll throw the question up on the Facebook page to see what other people's opinions on it are. Like specifically that rule. But I think with all of these rules, it'd be nice to see what people think about them.
Yeah. I think, you know, that one's probably one that, you know, will have a little dissension. I think
that'll be split a bit.
I think it'll be more split. I think most people are just perfectly fine with it. I think mm-hmm. the one though, that's going to cause the most, argument is the last one, which I am completely for as well. Like when they made these rules, I was ecstatic. I agreed with all of them. Big fan of these changes, and I hope that, you know, it quickly becomes standard, not just for Pro Tour Origins, but for just in general.
Oh, yeah.
'Cause this one is not
just for Origins, or maybe it is. But either way, even if it's at Pro Tour Origins, this is only concerning video coverage matches where you can the card layout is now structured. You have to have creatures in front of lands, library to one side, and then a graveyard adjacent to the library, and then exile zone is neat library. And cards that are untapped must face their controller, so you can't have them. Basically, this is the fuck you, Adrian Sullivan rule,
yeah.
Because he is the reason why, or he is the person that violates most of these issues. Now, there's certain people saying, well, Dredge, it just makes sense to be able to lay out your graveyard because you got so much going on, you don't really use your battlefield or whatever you want to call it as. Like most people do in Magic.
Most decks do, yeah.
Either way, I like this rule because most games, like if you're going to play them or you're going to play competitively, they have specific areas for everything, and it makes it uniform for you and your opponent because then you know where to look to see everything. You know where your stuff should be so your opponent has, you know, quick access to it. And the people that are trying to, like, game other people or gain a slight advantage because they're doing something confusing, I just think that's douchey. I just think it's shitty. Mm-hmm. Like, this game is supposed to be one off of, you know, skill, whether it's play skill or deck building skill, whatever else. Like, that's supposed to give you an advantage. Having, like, being able to, like, fuck with your opponent because you play your cards in weird places and random areas, it is just it's douchey to me. Like, I've had people do it against me, and I take great care to make sure I know exactly what's going on, so it actually probably makes me play a little bit better against them because I get irritated at it. And before, it wasn't against the rules.
But you got shit for fucking tapping your lands 40 or tapping your ship 45, man. Like, what if that's the next thing on the chopping block? Like,
that's
now
fine.
You gotta
I'll tap it
degrees.
Completely 90. I don't see that happening because to me it's like
it's
tapped 45 degrees and everything else is completely, you know, standing straight up or whatever you want to call it, 90 degrees, 0 degrees, whatever. It's very clear that if I'm tapping a land, it's completely at a 45 degree angle. The other lands are straight. Uh-huh. And the creatures are straight. You know, certain people don't like it. And I know because I've asked a judge whether it's okay. And they said, yeah, it's clear that it's tapped. That's all that's required. You don't. Yeah. There is no rule that says you have to turn it 90. There is no, like, understanding that that's the tapped thing. Like, that's what I've done since I was a kid. And I've never had any issue
with
it.
See, and that's it. And the only issue, and this just, like, you know, to play devil's acrobat and be argumentative about it, like, not saying that it's wrong, because I'm the same way. Like, I tend to, like, I like to tap my lands to 45, and I like to tap, you know, my creatures, too, like, tap everything to fucking 45 degrees, but what I notice is, especially because usually when I'm playing Magic, I'm drinking, and I don't keep my board state as clean, like, I don't keep my lands and shit as clean and laid out as, like, you do. At times, it'll get confusing looking, and so I'll kind of switch what I'm doing halfway through and start tapping all my shit to 90 degrees to make sure everybody knows it's tapped, to remind me that it's fucking tapped, because, you know, it's great when you have, like, the, you know, a nice row of fucking shit or your shit laid out nice, and then it's just a, you know, a crisp fucking 45 degree fucking, yeah, that's tapped, no problem. But I, you know, the big thing with, like, having a rule about it, just like the rules we're talking about as far as organizing your board state, is it's gotta be a blanket thing to cover everybody, because when you tap your lands at fucking 45, there's no real question because your shit's laid out pretty smooth and even. But you can't really put a rule on your shit has to be smooth and even more than what they've already done.
No.
But then, like, I know the difference between mine and yours, like my board state and your board state, mine looks a lot more messy because, you know, I've got this over here and this, and they're kind of kicked a little bit. And even though, like, all of my shit's in the right place as far as, like, what the rule says.
But that's where the rules do come into play, because it has to be very clearly tapped, like, from everything else. So if your lands are kind of all askew or whatever else, you have to be able to look at it, which is why my board state is the way it is, because I do want to make sure that it is very clear that which lands are tapped, which ones are, you know, untapped, which creatures are tapped, which ones are untapped. So my board state is, you've played with me. I'm very particular. Like, I organize my lands. Most of the time I organize it by colors. So, like, if I've got three lands that produce white, and those are the only lands that produce white, I try and separate them from the ones like, okay, I've got five that produce green. And then a couple that only produce this color. I try and separate them so that way I don't mistap my mana, because I've done that in past tournaments and it's cost me. And I don't like making the same mistakes. So I've gotten into the habit of doing that. And then my creatures, I try and organize, even just subconsciously to me, I organize them by ones that I think are going to be attacking, by ones that I think are going to be left back, ones that I think are going to be utilized for like mana or different stuff. I try and separate them so that way I've organized them in my head, so when I start doing things, it's easier for me. But yes, there is
you have a very clean board state.
Yes.
But like you said, that you are right. Like, basically the rule is that they have to be.
It has to be clearly understood that those are
clearly
tapped.
Identified.
And so if your board state is completely jumbled, and so there is a question of whether something is tapped or not, yeah, maybe you should be tapping to 90.
Maybe you should be tapping to 90. Yes. Right. Okay. But no, I get you. That makes sense.
I am still following the rules. If I have a very clear cut board state, and when I tap everything to 45, it's very clear that those are tapped sideways. And I know simply because, and I'd never had a problem up until this, but there was a somebody I played, and I know part of it is because he was very salty. He was undefeated at that SCG LA tournament, and I was just stomping a mud hole in him. And he was like, oh, you know, could you, you know, tap these all the way, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, they're very clearly tapped. And he started to raise a hoopla, so, you know, I did what you should do, and I called a judge over, because if the judge says, no, you need to do that, I would have done it. And so I called, and I said, judge, are these tapped? Like, or is this clear enough to be considered tapped? And he said, yes, those are very clearly different and tapped to the side. They're, you don't need to tap them 90 degrees or whatever. There's you don't have to do that. So I said, okay, cool. And he proceeded to get a little bit more salty at me as stomped him.
You dick.
Yeah. Well, I
mean, you're a dick.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's why I did it, though, because, like, if he was very, like, if it seemed like it was sincere that he couldn't tell which ones were tapped and untapped, yeah, I would have made it clear. But it was very clear which ones were tapped. I tapped four lands.
Yeah,
I've cast this Purphoros that
is
just absolutely shitting on you, and you're just irritated, so you're trying to get whatever little digs you can in, and so I'll call a judge over just to make sure you can, you know, eat your own dirt. Like,
exactly.
Exactly. And so, but if they came out with a rule that said you have to tap it all the way 90, I would do that.
Then, fine. You do it. Yeah, of course.
You know, but I do like the fact that this rule, cuts out some of what I consider douchiness. Like, if you're, like, the first person that started doing, like, lands in front, and that's what made sense to you, and, you know, whatnot, because you did it because you liked it, not because you thought it was going to gain advantage, whatever. You're, like, the one person, or, like, the 1%, or 0.5%, whatever the fuck it is. But I know a lot of people do it simply to fuck with their opponents and make it more difficult for their opponents, and I just don't like it. I don't think that that's the nature of the game, and so I'm happy that they've done it at least for the coverage stuff, which probably was, you know, more in consideration of the viewers, because it's on coverage, so they want it to be clearly understood on camera. It's going to become harder for these people that like to do this if they have to keep switching up the way they do it. It's going to start fucking with them as well, because then they have to get, acquainted with casting, you know, creatures in front of their lands, or, you know, and then behind their lands when they're not on coverage. And honestly, I just hope it becomes the standard, because to me, it should be more structured.
Yeah. It just never made sense to me. Like, the main thing in terms of, like, doing it the other way is that when you line up blockers, like, why are you lining up your blockers through your lands? This is ridiculous. Like, that's...
Yeah, I mean, it looks ridiculous, like, and it is, but and that's the reason why they do it, is because there's a line of cards in between their creatures and yours, and certain people who are very visual, they'll get mixed up, or they'll, you know, get confused because they've got other cards in the way, whereas when it's the way it's supposed to, or the way that is generally accepted, the creatures are all in front of each other. They're facing each other like if they were on a battlefield, which is what they normally call it, and that's what makes sense. You know, so then you have all the creatures up front. They're all there. It's much harder to get them lost in the confusion. Now, if you do so with them in front, then obviously you made an error and you should pay the price for it. But you know, when you're having to look past all of the, you know, lands or whatever funky way that certain people play their cards. Now, some of it, I don't know. Like, some people say it's really condescending. Other people, you know, like Adrian Sullivan plays his cards flipped, too, to where it's facing the opponent.
But
now,
for one thing, he doesn't have really any creatures like that. To his credit, like, in the last Pro Tour where he went deep, like,
yeah,
he actually
black control.
Only had, like, two or three creatures in his deck, so he didn't actually have to line up attackers at all. Like, if he had a creature, like, he didn't have to line it up because he only had one creature. So that's the only thing I could say there. Like, that... Like,
yeah, but. Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's where the argument, and that's all speculative, whether he's doing it to be condescending or whether he's doing it to be polite and showing, like, so making the cards easier for his opponent to read. Now, it could be both, you know, like, who knows why he does that, but other people have adopted it, and a lot of people think that it's really condescending, and I can kind of understand why. But either way, I just think that it should be uniform. It makes everything
yeah.
easier. You lose the ability to go, oh, well, you know, I only lost because some, you know, douchebag had his, like, mountains covering his creature and I didn't see it, or I got...
Yeah, like, that's my only thing, like, if, like, I don't have a strong opinion on it, but if I ever see you, like, playing lands in front, and then all of a sudden, like, one day, you're playing lands in back, and you have, like, a Kessig Wolf Run or something, like, you know, just like, like, that's kind of sketchy,
yeah.
Maybe, like.
Yeah, no, and that's,
like,
and that's my point.
I'm trying to bury this and hide it so you don't know what's happening until it happens.
Yeah, and a lot of people try and do that, and you know what, it with, like, lands and stuff like that, that's completely fair. If you want to
yeah.
put your Ink Moth Nexus on the bottom of your other lands, there's no rule against it, and if your opponent
right.
forgets about it, that's on them. You still have it on the battlefield. It's still where it's supposed to be. It's as long as it's clearly, you know, visible to where you can see the top of the name of the card.
Right,
and,
so you're not putting it underneath a stack of mountains. Or
yeah,
fucking,
because some
yeah.
people, they'll, like, and I've done it, like, in really cluttered board states, I'll just stack the lands all on top of each other. But if my opponent said, hey, can you spread those out to where I can see what they are, I'll definitely do it. But most of the time,
oh, yeah.
I'll only do it if there's no utility land. If there's a utility land, I try and make it very clear that it's on the battlefield and I can use it.
Mm-hmm.
But... It, you know, if you want to put that at the bottom and hope your opponent, you know, loses or is not paying full attention, you know, that
yeah.
goes down
it's
to being
sketchy,
your
like,
yeah, that's
the,
part
the
of
chip,
that,
like,
it's sketchy, but it, I mean, it's not against the rules.
It's not against the rules,
attention.
And sometimes it just happens. If that's, like, the second land you play, and then you start playing lands on top of it, and you don't use that
yeah.
utility land because you're using your mana for other things, it's very easy to forget. But it's double-edged sword because it's very easy for you to forget it as well if you have it underneath
right.
everything else rather than on top of it. And I've paid the price for that too of not realizing that I had a manland and, you know, whatever else. It's cost me top 8 at States before specifically.
Yeah.
And you know, I wasn't trying to be douchey by putting it underneath. It was one of the first lands that I played to fetch or to cast a Rampant Growth. And it subsequently got buried, and if I would have remembered it, I could have used it as a blocker and then had lethal the next turn and killed my opponent and made top 8. And because I didn't do that, I lost. And so, like I said, it's a double-edged sword, but it doesn't matter because you're still following the rules. As long as it's visible and it's on the battlefield where your lands should be, it, you know, you're perfectly fine. It's when you start, you know, putting your board state in odd
areas or angles and like trying to bury them for the most part, like, oh, the bottom's visible of it, but you know, whatever. That's when I start getting irritated. Up until this point, yeah, like it bothered me when people did it, but now I'm just happy that it looks like.
But it wasn't against the rules, and now, like, I think that's the biggest thing with this rule is, like, the closer that they can get to everybody having to have a fairly uniform board state and leaving the you know, guesswork out of it, the better off it is for everybody.
I agree.
They know what you're playing, and you're good.
I'm all for it. Like I said, I hope that all of these rules just become standardized. Like, mm-hmm. not just – I mean, obviously, yeah. the coverage rule is only for coverage. But, you know, the mulligan rule and the structured board state, I hope that that just becomes standard rules for everybody.
Yeah.
And that's just my personal opinion on it.
I think Magic is never going to be very watchable. I think for Magic to be watchable, there would need to be like some kind of like skin over the game, so to speak, where like you're playing, you know, your normal game Magic, but like for the viewers, like they would have to actually see like creatures and dragons and shit come out and fight each other.
Well, shit, how far off would it have to be to just have a little fucking 3D graphic of like,
yeah,
you know, fucking like, Liliana just kind of come off your card like and do her thing. And
like in that scene of Star Wars, like instead of like chess pieces, they were just like monsters like fighting each other.
Exactly.
And, like, well, they actually had that. Not like I used to play chess on my aunt's computer a long, long time ago, because when you move the pieces, they actually animated and did stuff, and they had unique fight, you know, actions against other pieces. But like the one I remember the most is the when you used the rook and you killed a queen, like the castle became like this golem and picked the queen up and ate her. And I was like, that's fucking badass. Like, chess
that's fucking bad.
Shit.
I like chess.
Yeah. and so, yeah, I agree with that. That's much harder to do because Magic, there's just thousands upon thousands of cards and they're constantly adding
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, but you could, like, if you had, like, just rules, you know, like, just it would default. Like, if the skin didn't know what to do, it just default to, like, something, like some creature beating some other creature up or something. Like,
yeah, like, I mean, I think that would be far less interesting, but.
Even if you look at like it would be less interesting. But if you look at
Duels of the Planeswalkers, that would be far easier because it's a much smaller card pool.
Well, no, what I mean is like their combat, like he's saying, if it had
you're talking about just the Planeswalker cards.
I'm talking about just the visual representation of a game that's already occurring in the regular game.
I watch Magic. I'll watch Magic videos, but. To me,
what I'm saying is if you throw in the graphic of like fucking, like even if it's like the combat graphics that they throw into Duels of the Planeswalkers that are just like some shit's happening, you know, it's like when you're watching the fucking pregame of the fucking NFL and like it's just like a big robot comes out and does some shit.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So it's a little more visually appealing. Like when attacks happen and they just, you know, across the top of the screen, you got the little.
You actually understand what's happening. What I'm saying is like. The visuals make you understand what's happening. So
yeah, no, I get like what Kevy's talking about is like when, like the blades, like the scratch marks that go over your life total when it
yeah,
changes.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they could easily adapt that, and it would be better. Yeah. But to me, what really makes it is like Magic to be able to watch it. Like you have to have a character, like a person that you enjoy listening to or talking to, like. There are certain people that stream or make videos that I can't watch. I won't watch them because either A, don't talk at all, or B, when they do talk, it's just not relevant or it's really fucking boring. And I'm not going to call out anybody because they're not, like, bad. It's just they're not somebody that I could sit through. And then there's people that are really good. They're very good at being entertaining, about being excited about it, about talking through the plays, or being all of the above. Like, if you can do all of that, if you can be entertaining, you can explain your you know, lines of play or why you didn't make a certain line of play, then it becomes inherently much more watchable. Either watchable because you're gaining valid information or watchable because it's actually entertaining. And that's when Magic to me is watchable. And to me, having those illustrations or you know, animations about the life, I could do without it. I don't care. Me personally.
Right.
It really boils down to the person that you're watching. Which is why they
that's,
have.
That's one of those things that, like, inherently they can't really, like, you know, it'd be nice if the people that were at the Pro Tour level all happened to have those great personalities, but that's not. that's not the reality in it. Like, the people that you enjoy watching, like streamers and stuff, you know, maybe great Magic players and they're entertaining, but it's really hard to find, you know, somebody that's good at both, like really good Magic player that can walk you through what they're doing or whatever. Even if it's, if you're looking at this like from a Pro Tour perspective, you know, you can't like watchable or coverage perspective, I'm sorry, like where it's watchable Magic happening on screen, like, you don't get anything from the player other than that little bit of like rumble you'll hear, like you'll catch a couple words here and there. Mainly it's just like, here's the fucking, the view of what's going on with the game. And even if you could get, you know, good personalities in there, then you don't have like Pro Tour level Magic. You have like the best personalities in the game that may be lacking in play skill, because otherwise they'd be on the Pro Tour.
Well,
So, like, what you have to do, I think, is with this game to make it watchable is shit like that. Like, you know, I know, like, to you it's not a big deal, but I think to a lot of people, like, I mean, just little shit like that to up the production value.
No, and I agree. Like, I'm not saying don't do that. I'm saying, like, and that's something that you can do on top of having personalities, right. And that's why they have people that do coverage, because obviously the people playing in those games, like I know personally, like when I stream, I talk through my plays all the time, and right. And you know, I'm fairly animated too, mostly because I'm drunk. You know, but I've had a number of people go, hey, I really like that, how you talk through your plays, or say why you're not doing something or why you are doing something. But when I'm in a big tournament or on coverage, like, I'm not going to do that, because all of my mental energy is focused on trying to make the best play possible. Right. But that's why they have, you know, Patrick Sullivan and Cedric Phillips, who are very, very good at commentating, trying to keep it entertaining, talking about it. LSV is another one that's really, really good. I've heard Numot, the Nummy, Kenji, that he was really good talking commentary? Through a commentary of Magic, and that makes it much more watchable, and that's something that you can have on top of having those animations that you were talking about.
I think things like that, yeah, definitely, you're right. Like, I mean, you can't, like, Maddie and I have said since fucking like the first episode, like, one of the things Magic needs is, you know, your heroes and villains and shit, like you have, like, to be entertaining in the Pro Tour, like, need your heroes and villains like you have in, like, wrestling and shit. You know, like WWE and shit. Like, you need to have heroes and villains that people can get behind, or people that can hate or love to hate and shit like that. But that's not, I don't think that's feasible in the Magic community, because, like, this is a community full of people that are trying to promote everybody getting along. And so I don't see them doing that. So, like, the next best thing.
You're talking about having, like heels?
What's that?
Heels? People that you watched because you dislike them?
Right. Or like, the villain that you hate him,
that's,
but you
that's
love
a heel.
Hating that guy.
Yeah, yeah. That's a heel.
And then having your heroes and shit like that. But, like, being this, you know, Pro Tour like it is, like, you can't really do that. Like, this isn't a scripted fucking thing, you know? So you have to fucking, you have to just deal with the people that, you know, we've got a community full of, like, not full, I don't want this to be a blanket statement, but I mean, come on, we all are in this community. A lot of the people aren't the most socially outgoing people in the world, and especially the better players out there are probably focused, and like you said, even you're a socially outgoing guy, but you can't focus on being entertaining while you're playing Magic at a high level and try to fucking, you know, do both. So, you know, the next best thing you have is the commentary, which, you know, Cedric and Adrian have done a good job of. Or is it Patrick? Which fucking Sullivan is it?
Patrick Sullivan is the one that's
Patrick Sullivan
on coverage.
The commentator. Right. And so, like, that's the next best thing, and I think you're definitely right. Like, there has to be, you know, good personality going on. But then, you know, if you add the whole package, you know, if you have, like I said, maybe you do a little bit more shit where it's like, you know, they have your stock fucking animations for, like, you know, when somebody casts Liliana, there's a little fucking Liliana animation that'll fucking come up off the top of the fucking card and do her little fucking thing and flash across the screen or something.
I mean, that's
much harder.
But then
when you get to the stock shit... But what I'm saying is, when you get to the stock shit where it's like at least doing like graphics across like where combat damage is happening instead of them talking about it, and everybody saying, okay, well, I see the board state, and I see that this is a 1-1, this is blocking this 2-2, and like this is okay, and then there's like, you know, bring it across like it does in Duels of the Planeswalkers. You get a little slash market combat, and it's like that way it's a lot easier for whether it's people like us or people that are just getting into the game to watch. It's like, oh, okay, combat just happened, and I just saw this creature die. Because this is a 2-2, this is a fucking 3-3, this creature dies, this creature's at -2/-2 until the end of the turn, and it, like, little shit like that, to represent it visually would be fine, and I don't think that'd be too hard to do.
No, like, the basic ones, like, doing the power and toughness, that would be difficult because it's so widely varying, and then you'd have to position it, like, but... Being able to do like the animations indicating like life loss or whatever else, that would be fairly easy, and I think that would be good. But you also have to understand like the formats of watching Magic. You watch Magic in different areas for different reasons. Like most people don't tune into like the SCG or GP Finals or the Pro Tour because they're watching strictly for like, oh, this is going to be entertaining. They're watching for information and to see high level play. It's kind of like nobody fucking tunes in to, you know, watch golf for entertainment purposes. Like they want to see skilled people doing like crazy things. It doesn't like have to be like, you know, super entertaining. Whereas if you're going onto Twitch to watch like a streamer play Magic, some of them do. It's like, you know, some people have tuned their streams to be informative and testing like certain technology. And then there's other people that have their stream is strictly for entertainment. It's just to go and watch these people have fun, play Magic. Who cares what the format? And, you know, mine is kind of in the middle. Like a lot of times on MTG, like I'm just drinking and drafting and like having fun while playing. And I try and talk through my plays because that's just who I am. But then, you know, there's people that they don't give a fuck. They're going to play whatever they want. They're going to play, you know, formats that you would never see in a tournament. Like on MTGO, what is that one where you cast like random ass creatures of whatever converted mana cost?
Momir.
People play Momir because that's entertaining. You don't know what's going on and you get to see the person's reaction and stuff like that. That is stuff that you watch for entertainment, and that person needs to be, you know, fun, exciting, enthralling. But then watching SCG Finals, most people that are tuning in to watch that are trying to either watch high-level play or are just trying to get information on the format, what's strong, what's winning right now, so on and so forth. So... You know, a lot of people that tune in and watch Magic, myself in particular, because I personally don't find coverage Magic very entertaining, but I do find it informative, so I will watch it for that reason. You have to know your audience, so I think that plays into it as well.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I think that...
I try and make sense sometimes.
Well, no, like, I think coverage has a long way to go. I think there's a lot of things that they could do. I mean, again, it's personal opinion. There's things that I think that they can do to make it better that maybe wouldn't even fucking, that you wouldn't care about. And there are things that you would like to see. I mean, it's all, I guess, kind of comes down to the consensus of what everybody wants to see and trying to make everybody happy. This community is really hard to make happy regardless because somebody's always going to have a problem with something. But, I guess that's how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, you can't ever worry about everybody, but you should worry about the majority.
Yeah, the majority, I guess, is what it comes down to. Yeah, you just worry about the majority.
I mean, that's what...
Speaking of the majority, we've got the majority of the fucking spoilers.
Oh, snap.
Segway. So should we get past this and get into the fucking
spoilers? Yeah, I was actually, after you got done talking, I was going to segue the hell out of this to get into the...
Yeah, but I totally did it way better.
You totally did. I can't argue with you. Your segue was far better than mine, because mine would have been like, you know what? We're fucking done, and if we want to get this cast over with pre-5 hours...
We've spoiled this conversation. Let's move into spoilers.
Oh, my God.
Jared's been fucked up for like a half hour now. I'm sorry.
You know he's fucked up when he starts referring to himself in third person.
Yeah, he's just like, Jared's been fucked up for a while.
Very hammered.
I'm going to rally, though. I'm going to have a good rally.
We got spoilers coming. We got a fucking,
you got
a rally.
More of this set was spoiled than it was. But we have 175 of 272 cards spoiled so far.
Like I said, the majority of the spoilers.
It is the majority, but a lot less than I had thought previous. Like today, I even posted on our Facebook, like, since most of this shit's spoiled, what do we think's strong? And now I realize I'm a fucking idiot.
Oh, man, there's some other things. Well, I mean, in fairness, like, most of the shit has been spoiled. Like, I feel like we have a bunch of fucking commons and uncommons left, which aren't
most of the mythics, for sure. I think there's still five lands that have yet to be spoiled.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So who knows what those are going to be? Those
I think, didn't we get the last mythic today?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's that blue one.
Titan of Erebos?
No, I think it was the blue. Where the fuck is it?
I don't know. I didn't do any. I was like, I'm not gonna be on a podcast today.
The Disciple of the Ring.
What's that?
Disciple of the Ring.
Oh well, there's a black mythic. I thought there was only one mythic left, but apparently there was more because there's a black mythic.
Yeah,
that
was the Erebos, the Knight of Erebos, or whatever it is.
Yeah, the Disciple of the Ring got spoiled yesterday.
Was it?
And then Titan of Erebos was spoiled today. So I think that's all the mythics?
I think
I'm not
so.
Sure though, because I don't know how to crunch the numbers because I don't use numbers very well.
Yeah, I don't. I'm never one of those people that looks at the numbers and the alphabetical order and like rules out which cards.
Yeah.
Like, there was a lot of people doing that shit. Like Modern Masters, that one's much more reasonable to do that because they're all reprints, and you know it's easier to like winnow down what's gonna be what could be printed in it or what makes sense. So people going, okay, well this is all ruled out of the lands because there's only three lands left and up to this alphabetical mark, so all of these cards are ruled out. But people
with
do that shit.
Set,
with
it's kind of like, whoa, or like with sets like this, it's like, whoa, all right, you're really fucking reaching.
Yeah, exactly. And I just don't do that. But yeah, Erebos is Titan. It's three black and one colorless for a 5/5. I think it's if you only control creatures on the battlefield.
Not on the battlefield. It's like I think it's as long as no
opponent
controls
a creature. Indestructible as no opponent controls a creature, so you can have multiples.
Right.
It's indestructible, and then whenever a creature leaves an opponent's graveyard, you may discard a card. If you do, return Titan of Erebos from your graveyard to your hand, which is a really weird return clause, but
yeah,
it plays nicely with that other card from this set, which I don't. If it sees play, it's purely a sideboard card. Where is it? It's two black and one colorless. Infinite Obliteration. You name a creature card, and then you search target opponent's graveyard, hand, and library for any number of cards with that name, and exile them, and then they shuffle. So it plays well with that.
A lot like Surgical Extraction, basically.
It's close, except for it sucks compared to
Surgical Extraction
is like one black Phyrexian black and one colorless. So essentially one colorless mana and two life, instant speed, any non-basic land or like anything but a basic land.
Right.
I think is Surgical Extraction. So this is far, far underpowered.
Right.
Compared to Surgical Extraction.
Erebos Titan, I'm looking at it. It's comparing it to like on Mythic Spoiler, because it's the spoiler is in fucking some other language, so you have to fucking click on it to read the English translation of it. And then it's got a little thesaurus under it, comparing it to Jism Jinn, fucking Yakora the Prisoner, and Phyrexian Obliterator. And I don't think it quite matches up to any of them.
I think it's better than Yakora.
It's better than Yakora. Because
this is all upside.
There's... But Yakora looks just like fucking Jism Jinn.
they look the same. They look the same, but Jism Jinn is a 5/5 for two black that deals one damage to your upkeep. Big, like, whoopty fucking do. And Phyrexian Obliterator is converted mana cost.
No, Jism Jinn costs four.
Oh, does it?
It's two black and two
colors. Oh, yeah,
color.
Two colors. So Phyrexian Obliterator is just far outstrips
far and away better
all of them.
I finally I finally got those two that I ordered fucking
so
yesterday.
So, to me, like, this is better than Jism Jin. It's much harder to cast for the triple black, but it's all upside, no downside. Whereas all the, like, the Jism Jin and the Yakora, they have downsides. And Phyrexian Obliterator is a much better card.
Phyrexian Obliterator's only fucking downside is that it's 4 black.
4 black, yeah. I love that card. I've actually been playing with it in Modern.
I know.
Yeah, you felt the wrath. this card, it's definitely not bad. I mean, it's a 4-cost 5/5 that has upside, whether you can take advantage of it or not. It's a 5/5, and Languish is -4/-4, so it's pretty reasonable to think that you could cast this and then Languish and make it indestructible and, attack your opponent and keep it indestructible. So I'm not sure how I feel about this card or whether I think it sees play. I think for the first couple months while Theros is still legal, that mono black could actually be a thing, because you still have the Gray Merchant, Thoughtseize, Ultimate Prize, Bile Bite, Languish, Crux of Fate, Hero's Downfall. There's a couple other black creatures that are viable. There's that new double black 3/1. What's the name of that? Where you can buy it back. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
No. I haven't paid that much attention.
I mean, this card is sweet. Like, so I think mono black is going to be a thing. Let me find it real quick. Despoiler of Souls. It's 2 black for a 3/1 that can't block, but you can pay 2 black and exile 2 other creature cards from your graveyard and return it from the graveyard to the battlefield. And you could do that at instant speed. So for the first few months, I mean, you're going to have Thoughtseize, Despoiler of Souls, Hero's Downfall, Languish, Knight of Erebos, Erebos itself, Crux of Fate, Gray Merchant, Read the Bones, Sign in Blood. Like, I think that mono black control or mono black midrange could actually be a deck again. Probably not on the same level as it was before, because you don't have Pack Rat. But you also have Demonic Pact. Like, the black has a lot of tools, so Liliana. We'll see where this goes. But Knight of Erebos, if mono black is a thing and Gray Merchant is a thing, is definitely going to see play, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it.
But I am quite drunk off of this very
what
powerful
do you guys
alcohol.
Like to revisit some.
Wait, we got sipping on.
Oh,
I'm sipping on some fucking Sierra Nevada.
That's
sad
lame.
To say.
I'm drinking vodka and cucumber fucking Gatorade.
Oh yeah, I am drinking that Irish poutine that I sent you a picture of, the 140 proof.
Oh, I didn't even look to see that you sent me a picture.
Look on it.
I probably won't open it anyway because of how many times I've sent you pictures of my dick.
You know that I'm not going to do that. I'm a grower.
Well,
I'm a grower,
well,
not a shower.
Or you might be the guy that's just like, oh, dude, you know I'm never going to do that because I hate it when you do it to me, and then finally get me back by doing that.
I guess I'm next leveling you right now because I'm straight honest in the fact that I'm never going to send you a dick pic.
Yeah, now I'm paranoid.
I can hear you making a drink quite loudly.
I know, and I'm way far away from my microphone right
yeah,
now.
you could tell. You could tell.
Okay, I'm coming back. Oh, and here we are. So
what do you guys think of Nissa?
Nissa, I think, is the second best planeswalker, just off of, like, overall power from both sides of it. She's the only one that gives you immediate value. Like, you get value no matter what casting her.
That's what people are saying. It's already something that you might play in Standard, and then...
Oh, you definitely... This is definitely going to see play in Standard.
Like, when I saw it, I was like, it's so slow, though. Like, you need to be on 7 pretty much, unless you're cheating out lands with a Courser or something. Like,
But, I mean, think about it. Like, there's so many, like, all of these see play in any deck that runs Collected Company. Like, it's just the all the different things that do with this shit is ridiculous. You know, because you can Collected Company on, you know, turn four, hit Nissa, put a land in your hand so you're guaranteed to hit your next land drop. You know. There's so many different possibilities. For a while there, I was really, really worried about Standard, specifically because of Languish. Now I'm wondering whether there's enough tools that Languish isn't going to be a powerful enough thing because it's a sorcery, and there's a lot of good instant speed tricks or cards that you can cast to get around it, but we'll see. I definitely think Languish is going to be a huge card in Standard regardless, but...
I'm not even up on Standard, but I definitely can agree.
Yeah, I mean, Languish is definitely going to see play in Standard. That card is going to be used in any deck that is heavy black.
Yeah, it's insane. I don't know if it was Saffron Owl, if he, like, did some analysis, and it basically, like, hits, like, I don't know. I don't remember what the number was, but it's, like, 80% of, like, the relevant creatures. It's like, up there. Yeah. Like.
And what's bad is, like, 5% of the creatures that it doesn't hit, you can play if you're running black. Like, Tasigur, Siege Rhino, and the whatever Angler, the 5-5 Delve. Like, you can play that in Languish. Now the Knight of Erebos or whatever, the Titan of Erebos, you can play that with Languish. Like, Languish is going to be an absolute house in Standard. And I think one of the decks, though, that can combat it is Collected Company decks, because they can have aggressive starts before they, you know, they get to cast Languish, and then they cast Languish, and then you end of turn Collected Company and start beating in their face again. So, you know, I hope it doesn't come down to Collected Company deck or Languish deck, but we'll see where it goes. There's a lot of really powerful, really interesting cards in Origins that I'm excited about. So we will see.
Yeah, you totally have like such a crystal clear read on Standard, David. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, every time I'm just like I don't, because I tend to focus more on Modern.
A lot of people do.
And every time David is like, you know, this is what fucking matters in Standard, and this is garbage, and this is good, and...
He does have a pretty fucking crystal clear view on it, you're right there. And I'm glad somebody does, because I don't have a view of it at all. I'm like, oh, Standard! I don't know, a day or so ago, I was looking through a bunch of, like on Goldfish, just looking through, like, the Standard decks, because I'm so far removed from Standard that I was just like, oh, I don't even know what's happening now. I started looking through some of it, and I found a few different decks that look fun as shit to play, but they look like they're fucking, you know, Tier 2 or Tier 1.5 decks. And I'm like, all right, like, those could be fun, but they also cost, like, $30, like, fucking Black Aggro and fucking Mono Red. I'm like, shit, Mono Red's, like, not cheap. But I've got, like, all of the cards anyway, or most of the cards anyway, so I could probably play that. But I'm like, when the fuck am I going to play Standard? I don't ever go to fucking FNM. And, like, we're here in the fucking, in the cave here, like, I don't like playing Standard. That doesn't seem fun. So, you know, just get into Modern. I think that's my biggest thing, is I've got no reason to play Standard. I think if I had a reason, then, you know, if I played Modo more often... I probably would get a little more into Standard, or if I went to F&M's and, like, or played Constructed Magic or Tournament Magic more often, then I would. But
competitive. If you're not, like, super competitive, it's fucking hard. Like, maybe you can do it a little bit online, because it's
really hard. See, I haven't played online since, I don't know, forever ago, because I just kind of got over it. I was just like, you know what, like... I rarely have time to play Magic nowadays, and when I do, I'd rather play with my fucking friends and hang out and just kind of make a fucking night of it than, like, jump on. I think earlier on I was more about, like, I need to play Magic. Now I got so much shit going on. I'm like, all right, well, I don't really need to play Magic. I could be doing other things with my fucking spare time, and I just don't jump on Modo anymore because I refuse to touch my old computer, and I haven't cared enough about Modo to try to fucking get a copy of Windows to put it on my Mac. So I'm in a weird situation where I'm like, I'd rather just play Modern altogether.
Yeah.
Mm. See where I am, like where I am with Standard. Like one of the reasons why, like I clue in on Standard is because I like to brew with the new cards, mm-hmm. and certain cards stand out to me because, like you've heard the Doomblade test or the Lightning Bolt test or whatever else, you have to identify those cards that have really powerful effects. And when you're building a deck, you have to keep those in mind. So, like, if you're wanting to build a deck in Standard, you have to be paying attention to, like, Languish or, you know...
Right.
Pre-Origins, it was, like, Crux of Fate. Like, if you're a dragon deck or not a dragon deck, like, are you afraid of this card? Are you not afraid of this card? How do you, you know, take advantage of it? Like, Hero's Downfall has been a pillar of Standard, you know? And so now, it seems like 5 toughness is, like, the magic number come Origins. Because a lot of cards deal 4 damage or -4/-4 or whatever else. So cards like Archangel of Tides, the Ember Maw Hellion, you know, Tassigur, Siege Rhino, the Angler, all those cards stand out to me because they're hard to kill. They're not, you know, especially Siege Rhino, because Ultimate Price is going to be a thing. I think Bile Blight is going to be big because of goblins and elves. It's things like that, interactions like that, that, you know, cause things to stand out, and then you start judging cards based on those, that narrative, like, does it survive this, does it survive this, does it get around this, can it play around this, you know, can you cast it at instant speed so you can mitigate the effects of Languish, or, you know, do you get instant value so where, to where if you cast it into Languish, it's not a big deal, you know? Like, I think Master of the Unseen is going to see a resurgence because Mono White is another deck that I think bears scrutiny because you have Gideon, you have Knight of the White Orchid, you have Soldier of the Pantheon, you have Dragon Hunter, you have all these aggressive 1 and 2 drops, you have Bramaz, and then you can have Master of the Unseen, Archangel of Tides. You have a lot of tools there, and with Master of the Unseen, if they Languish all of your stuff away, you start resetting. You make a manifest creature end of turn. You can beat them down with that, or you can flip it if it's a creature. And if you have an Archangel of Tides, you still have that out. So you have to find the cards that combat the big threats. So that's how I approach Standard anyway.
Yeah, no, it's awesome.
That's a good way to do it.
And again, like, for a while, I was just, like, so hooked into Modern and just, like, fucking around with, like, weird brews in Modern. And, like, when David, like, broke, he basically like, broke Standard a little bit, like, with the,
the Mastery.
Yeah. I was just like, oh my god, like, what am I doing with Modern? Like, and but it is a trade-off. Like, you need to keep up with it, and your cards are gonna like lose value more quickly. Like, but yeah, just.
Well, I think that's a big trade-off. It's like, how much time do you have to fucking invest in it? Like, I feel like, and I've said this before, I feel like I have the time to invest my thoughts in Modern, and my time and my fucking my money in Modern because. You know, I'm not really prepared to make that jump into Legacy or Vintage, but I'm good with Modern. I like how the format sits, and I have enough time to be able to be like, oh shit, it's been weeks since I've been able to play Magic, and shit hasn't changed much. Like, you know, something might have fucking shifted a little bit, but shit hasn't changed much. Standard moves much faster. You're fucking, I don't have the disposable income to just throw money into Standard, and then keep, like, not only, like, worry about what deck I'm playing in, what decks I'm supposed to be fighting against, but also, like, when do I need to move my cards so that I don't get my pants pulled down on fucking the price of them? Like, you know, when do I need to get rid of the shit that's in Standard because this is going to drop price? Because that market moves a lot faster, too. And, like, I don't have ridiculous income. Like, I don't mind investing on a card. Like, I don't mind investing $80 a piece on Bobs and then... At some point, they get reprinted, and then the price drops, and now they're fucking $40. It's like, oh, man, over the last fucking couple years, I lost, like, fucking 50% of the value of them. It's like, oh, that sucks. I've played a shit ton of fucking Bobs before, yeah. though. So I had fun playing with them, and I had a good time. Like, you know, and it modern, if you're... there are the spikes and fucking valleys and shit, you know, the same way as there are with standard. It's like, oh, this is a new deck this week, and this shit's spiking up, and this shit's dropping, and, like, you can play that, but, like, a lot of the fucking standard... I mean, a lot of the modern playables, like, just the staples... are there and they're gonna stay. And if they lose value, like they're gonna lose value over time, whereas standard is like, fuck, man. Trying to keep up with that is fucking crazy. And the amount of Magic I get to play, I'm like, shit, if I get a fucking, if I borrow a standard deck from David, I'm lucky if I play it once and learn how to actually play the fucking deck. And then I'm like, oh, hey, man, I still got this fucking mono red devotion deck here. Like the other night, he came over. I'm like, oh, here's your deck back. I've played that once since you gave it to me months ago, and that doesn't fucking fly in standard, like, because I don't play outside of the house much.
Yeah,
at this point.
It just turns over so quickly. It's hard, like, especially in paper. Like online, you can sort of do it online.
Yeah, yeah.
Get it in and out, but in paper, it's basically impossible unless you just have
to be
really serious.
Like you said, but Magic. The plus is that, like, the upside of it, like you were saying, though, is, like, you know, with Standard, is, like, you have that chance to fucking brew. You have that chance to, like, see this new spoiler set come out and fucking jump on shit and brew. Like, because Standard's a lot tighter card pool. So the decks that are out there are doing, you know, less degenerate shit. They're doing, you know, they're not as powerful because you're limited. And so you can take these cards that are, you know, you can look at right off the bat and be like, that's not going to be eternal playable. It doesn't matter. But it might be a fucking standard card, and I need to jump on that, and I can start brewing with that. Like, it, you know, you can have a lot more fun with standard, I think. It's just, you know, it depends on your ability to how often you get to play and what you get out of it. You know, that's why I've landed on modern. Like, modern seems to be the perfect fucking middle ground for me. And I mean, that's not the same for everybody, but, you know, like David's fucking a lot further invested in this game than I am. You know, David's out playing tournaments all the time. David's a lot better player. And because he's a lot more invested in this, you know, he's out there doing it because he loves the game, and he's doing it because he has the ability to do it. And he has the ability to do it because he's had that same mentality for a long time. He loves the game, he loves to play, and he loves to brew. So it works great for him. Where I'm at, I'm like, well, fuck, man. I got another kid coming. I don't have as much time to play Magic, but I still love doing it. So every chance I get, I do. And where I've landed is like, all right, cool. Well, these every time I look at the spoilers, I'm like, man, I wish I could bring more to the fucking table than like, oh, well, is this going to work in my burn deck, or is this going to be modern playable? But like a lot of times I can't, because I look at them and I'm like, yeah, I don't even know what's going on in standard anymore. So yeah, I'm just going to...
Like, everyone does a Magic podcast. Like a lot of times you're just like, I don't give a shit about standard. Yeah, this will probably see some play in standard. Maybe a little modern play, and like that's like, you know, a lot of the interesting, quote unquote, interesting cards are like in that category. Where it's like, yeah, I'll see some standard play and maybe some modern play. I don't know. And, all right. It's tough to like.
And I do like the fact that I love the fact that I'm still in that spot, though, that I can just be fucking easily entranced by a card that, like, when you really look at it, it's like, oh, man, that card's garbage, or that card's a trap. But I still, like, I can look at the spoiler list and be like, I don't really care what's going on in standard. I care about what I care about as far as cards go, so I'll glance through these, but nothing really sticks out to me. And then I'll find a card that I'm just like, oh, man, maybe this is fucking cool. And I start fucking all day at work, I'm thinking of these fucking ideas and shit. And then, yeah, I realize, like, oh, wait, that's just a bad card. You know, that's a trap. Or maybe that's a good card. Or maybe I'd like to play with it. But I still love the fact that, like, I still have that, like, you know, kid at Disneyland fucking outlook on this game. And I, you know, as much as I don't get to play, or as much as I don't get to focus on it as much as, like, some of our listeners do, or like, players like David do, I look at it like, dude, I'm still just entranced by this shit. I'm just like, I fucking love it. Oh, what does this card do? Oh, that seems awesome if it was in a fucking elves deck, or, you know, whatever. Yeah. And then I realize, like, oh, man, that card is terrible because there's 30 other cards out there that do that same thing better.
Yeah, so like what, like in terms of like burn, like with like Days Undoing, what are you thinking there? I mean, it seems like it could draw some cards.
Days Undoing, I forget what that one does. Shit.
That's the Time Spiral one that ends the turn.
Oh, yeah. I don't really think that had... When I looked at it, I didn't really think that had anything to do with burn. I didn't think it was really going to do anything for me. I don't know if it's got a place somewhere else. But as far as, like, Days Undoing, like, it doesn't seem... Like, ending the turn doesn't do shit for me. Like, and then we went through this before too, right? Hold on, let me find the card so I can read sound like a fucking retard.
What it does in burn though is you can use all your burn at the end of your opponent's turn, then on your turn you draw a card. If it's a land, you play it. Then you cast this, go up to 7, and if you have any untapped mana, all your spells are instant speed anyway. So who gives a fuck whether it's your turn or their turn? And then you've refilled 7 cards. So it seems like it could be a tool for burn.
It could, but you look at it like, I mean, like Treasure Cruise got the burn decks to play blue. And that's because Treasure Cruise was 1 blue. But this is like, I mean, it's still 1 blue, but it's 3 mana, which is not really what you want to be doing anyway. Like, there's not a whole lot in fucking burn that you want to be spending 3 mana on.
I agree. I'm just saying that you also don't give a fuck about its clause of if it's your turn, end the turn. Because
that's true.
Most of your spells are all instant speed, and you can cast them whenever. And so if you have an open mana, you can use a Lightning Bolt, or if you have 2, you can Helix or Boros Charm. And it's also,
reading it again, like, it, you know, it, there's also that fact that, like, you know, when I'm running out of gas because I've already thrown all of the fucking lightning bolts or I've already thrown all of the burn spells, like, I can just put those back into my library, too. They're not, like, spent cards. Because they're coming out of my graveyard and going back
in. Yeah, you're shuffling it all back in.
It definitely feels like one of those, like, you know... This is the way I try to look at it. Is like, it's one of those. If I'm in a shit situation, this card could be awesome. Like, if I'm in a late game where I'm running out of gas, this card could be fucking awesome. But you know, you don't really want to build your deck that way, you know. And I especially don't want to get into a color that I don't care anything else about. Like, Treasure Cruise is one of those things I didn't mind getting into blue for that effect because it was so easy. You know, it was just like, boom, fucking, you know, basically 1 mana, I draw 3 cards. I don't mind fucking tapping, I don't mind it getting into blue for that. But, like, with this, it's like, if this card had white in it instead, like, it seems like it would be a lot more feasible. It's not a bad idea, but I don't know if I would, you know, I could be wrong. I don't know if I would get into blue for this kind of corner case card, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's reasonable. I just think it bears more scrutiny in the understanding that, the clause of if it's your turn, end the turn is not a big blow to a burn deck. Like, they could care less. You can, you know, cast probably 3 or 4 out of the, you know, spells in your hand that you draw on your opponent's
Which
turn.
Is true, because, you know, when I think about it, like, you know, I've got shit, like, you know, Shard Volley's instant, Lightning Bolt, of course, is instant, but then, you know, I've got, like, shit like Lava Spike, like, the bulk of my deck, you know, the burn spells that are worth fucking putting in there, because, you know, your game plan is just to fucking empty your hand into their face and go, the most efficient burn spells you possibly can. And because of that, there are only so many of those, so a lot of them are sorcery speed, like Lava Spike and shit like that.
Much more so in the modern burn deck, but in Legacy, the majority.
Yeah, Legacy's definitely different. That could change. That could be the tipping point where, like, bringing that in might not be a bad idea.
I personally don't think it's great, but I don't think it's bad. Like, Days Undoing is a really interesting. I mean, we went into pretty decent length about it.
Talking about it in, like, in a burn deck, I think is where JR's coming from.
People are talking about, like, they're saying, like, maybe, like, it's not, it's, the bad rap on it is that, like, it's just terrible in the aggro mirror because you give your opponent the jump on you. So maybe it's like a sideboard card.
I mean, the other way is you find a way to cast it at instant speed, like with Quicken or...
Sure. But I think that's less likely. I think, like, there's even a greater chance of, like, what if you just, like, put this... Like, if you took, like, a Infect, like, green-blue Infect deck and, like, took out some of the three drops and just made it, like, more weighted towards one drops and just, like, made it more just, like, you know, less careful, more just, like, I'm just going to, like, blast Infect.
Just go apeshit.
The deck that we generally can, you know, concluded was the best was Affinity, yeah.
Yeah.
And I still think that that's probably the deck that could probably take advantage of this.
Yeah,
the most,
I agree.
Some sort
they
of
have,
like
the most zero drops. The other one that I thought of was, like, Death Shadow, like the Suicide.
Oh, the Suicide Black. Yeah. Suicide Zoo. That one's not bad, but at some point you have a very much diminishing returns on the cards in your hand because you only have so much life to pay. So,
yeah, I played that one recently online. It's like it's really explosive, but it just feels like garbage. Like,
yeah, I'm not impressed with that deck, and I don't see it going anywhere. But
it is fun though. I mean,
yeah. Well, and I think that's where people go with it. It's also a very interesting stylistic play where you're wanting to do damage to yourself to damage your opponent more.
Yeah.
So. That's interesting, but the card that got spoiled recently that really has me kind of wondering about is the Animist's Wood Awakening.
What is that one?
That's a green and X, and you reveal the top X cards of your library, put all land cards from among them onto the battlefield tapped, and the rest on the bottom of your library and in a random order. But if you have Spell Mastery, meaning if you have two or more instant and or sorcery cards in your graveyard, you untap the lands. So you have the ability to, like, say, you know, turn one Thoughtseize, turn two Anticipate or whatever, and then... like turn five or six, it's very easy to think, like, maybe, you know, mid game, you've easily got two instants or sorceries in your deck that you pay X of a five, see like three lands, play them untapped, you've ramped two times, basically two mana that turn, and then cast something gigantic. It's like a really, really weird, powerful spell that I'm not sure how to feel about it. I don't know whether it's just stupid or whether it's busted.
It reminds me of, I forget the name of it. It's only legal
on
Legacy.
It's so out of my realm.
Where each player just searches their library for, like, X basics and puts it into play. Like, in the sense that, it, like, it's a
Oh, is that the one that came out with the Commander or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember...
But the point is, it's sort of like a Scape Shift card. It's sort of like, if you just, like, have Scape Shift and then get some kind of incremental value off of this, where it's just, it's interesting.
Yeah, I that was a sexy voice. What was that?
Oh. Holy shit, I'm back. Oh, no.
Oh, shit.
Man. Can't get rid of me. I'm like herpes. I pop up all the time.
What's going on?
It reminds me of that fucking Dave Chappelle fucking Muppet episode where, like, fucking Charlie Murphy's character just pops out the trash can. He's like, I beat that shit like it owes me money.
He was like, what you don't understand is that I have a hand.
Yeah. What you don't understand. As I make love to my hand. I don't need to, honey. I beat my dick like it owes me money. And that's why I say, fuck it.
Man, you guys make me... I gotta watch Dave Chappelle again. I haven't seen it in several
years. Oh, my God, so funny. What the five fingers say to the face? Slam!
So we found us a Marcel.
Yeah, I came out the woodworks. So I finally made it. Yes, it's like Vegas again. We got all the cohorts here.
We got all the alcoholics in one cast.
Yeah.
And ironically, though, we've been sitting here talking actual Magic for a while.
I know, we got to stop that. Marcel gets very angry when Magic is talking.
No, seriously. Yeah, like, Heavy Metal, you guys could do, like, half of the cast, Serious Magic Talk, but that should be, like, there should be a quota after that. You should start, like, stop everything.
The quota's gone up, though, because we got TSG back in the fold, and so, like, the Magic quota has gone up.
Yeah, I know. That's why you got to work actively to stop it from happening.
All right. I'm sorry, Papa Marcel.
We take the opportunities tonight.
Speaking of Papa Marcel, you are actually going to be a Papa. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir. It's quite the achievement and nerve-wracking experience at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Achievement unlocked.
Achievement unlocked. I am fertile.
Marcel, let me give you one fucking bit of advice as a parent. Every time you get fucking nervous about it, realize that I, Kevin Metal, have been a successful parent for the last 4 fucking years. So if I can do this, you can do this.
Actually, I take a lot of comfort in that. So.
don't take too much comfort. It's pretty much all Sarah. It's all Sarah.
It's all Sarah. But I mean, Jesus Christ, if I could do it, fuck, anybody could do it.
Yeah, I mean, at the least you should take from it is, you know, Brody is a healthy, happy kid in spite of Kevy being in the house all the time, so.
Exactly.
It can be done.
Well, that's why they got the garage, right? You put Kevy back there in his quarantine.
You would think that, but no, they let him commingle. It's crazy.
Oh, man.
It's crazy. No, actually, this last weekend I went over there and Brody was still awake. And I feel bad because I started, like...
Because you're an asshole.
Because I'm a dickhead. I started playing with Brody, like, you know, big time, just throwing him around and playing around, getting him all riled up. To the point where, at one point, he's in the game room going, "Where's Petey? I gotta find Petey." Kevy's like, "Petey?" He's like, "David is Petey." We don't know where he got I became Petey.
Where did you get Petey from?
Yeah.
Well, that's David. It's like, I know. David is Petey. And I was like... All right, well, that's weird.
Yeah, but then they're like, all right, well, Brody, it's time to go to bed. And he was very, very sad. And I felt...
He was crushed.
Destroyed.
Sometimes you get disoriented as fuck. People become other people. Yeah.
Well, and that makes sense because I was, like, flipping around, throwing him on the couch.
Yeah.
He got very confused. Well, no, you can't even say that because it was very clear to him. He's like, no, David is Petey. He decided that.
Registered in his head.
Yeah.
He's just like, no, yeah, David's Petey now. Like, he's at that point where, you know, I do what I want. I'm fucking, I can name people who I want to name them.
Yeah.
But he is a blast. Over.
Oh, no.
So
yeah,
apple doesn't fall far from the tree, is what you're saying.
Yeah, just assigns names.
Where is Petey? Who's Petey? at Raging Gumby. Oh, okay. Yeah, I get who you are.
Oh, no, see, he probably thought about Pissed Off Petey.
There we go.
Punch in the face.
I kind of look like him, so I can see the distinction.
Exactly. You just ugly, you know, distorted. So.
Whoa. Oh, fuck. Wow. I take it back. I don't want you to reproduce. You are mean.
It's because we talk about Magic.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
What are you
just
doing?
Just thought, you know what?
You fucking ugly nerds talking about your nerdy game. No, too far? All right, cool. Yeah, that was the line, I guess. I stepped over it.
Okay, that's it. I'm going home. I had enough of this.
I'm out. Fuck you guys.
Cross the line. So, you're just mean.
All right.
There's limits.
Now that Marcel's here, what the fuck are we going to talk about? Can we keep talking about spoilers at all?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Talk about it.
Are there any cards in Origins that you're excited about?
Actually, quite a few of them. There's a lot of the cards from the 30th to the 29th, a lot of those that were spoiled, I was very interested in.
Like Animus Awakening? What do you think about that one? That's the one we're talking about.
Oh, that one? I'm not too excited about that.
No? Are you? I see. I don't know how to feel about it. I don't know whether it's, like, busted or whether it's, like, lame. Like, it's.
I mean, but by the time you get to the mana to cast it for it to do anything more, like, you know, to get 5 lands, that means you're going to have to dig for, like, you know, 8 to 10 cards. So by the time you get cast that, like, having 5 lands that come into play tap, is that really going to do anything?
Yeah, well, and then you also have to have something to do with the mana, untapped mana. So,
right,
like, is this too much?
I'm sure that there's ways to do it, like having some sort of mana sink on the battlefield, like maybe some sort of like green white deck that has like Mastery of the Unseen. You have the ability to like ramp out and then start utilizing it, because it's just all land. So you can put Nykthos onto the battlefield and start producing, like, nutty amounts of mana. It just feels like, in the right deck, that's a very powerful effect. But at the same time, what you said is very true in the fact that, like, what are you doing with the mana? You have to survive to cast it for a reasonable amount. So that's kind of where I was getting at and talking about is I don't know whether it's stupid or busted.
I think it's err on the side of stupid.
Err on the side of stupid. That's probably a safe. What are the cards you are excited about, sir?
I did think Evolutionary Leap was cool. I don't know how good that's going to be. That's the one green enchantment. You pay one. You pay green, you sacrifice a creature. Reveal the top cards of your library until you reveal the creature card.
But you put it into your hand. That's the clause that, like, this is almost just kind of like protection, like removal protection for your creatures. You know, because you can always just sacrifice it in response to a removal spell, get another creature, put it into your hand. But it's the fact that, like, obviously it loses a lot of its power in the fact that you are, you know, putting it into your hand, so.
Yeah, no, it's not like otherwise it'd be like a, polymorph, in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It would just be, like, you would just cast token generators or, you know, token-style creatures and then have gigantic busted creatures in your deck that you can essentially, like you said, polymorph into. So that's where this card is, like, it's balanced, it's fixed, it's kind of like Oath of Druids, like, fixed in the fact that it's not going straight onto the battlefield. But that limits what kind of creatures you want to put in your deck, like, where is the balancing point? Do you want high end or do you want low end and make it aggressive? So it's definitely an interesting card. It's kind of like a build around me card.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'll see how far it gets. I do like the, what was it, the Abbot of the Curl Keep, the one with Prowess.
I am kind of liking that.
Which one's that one?
It's a one in a red for a 2/1 human monk with Prowess, and then whenever it enters the battlefield, exile the top card of your life. When it enters the battlefield, exile the top card of your library.
Oh, yeah. See, that's much better than the one that just recently went into the cube, the Ire. It's like the Megamorph Ire Shaman or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that this is far better.
Because I mean, I like it because it's got Prowess, so you can attack him.
Yeah,
you know,
you could still cast this on turn 2 just as a 2/1 Prowess, and it's not terrible, but, like, maybe turn 4, you can cast this into, like, another, like, 2-drop or a burn spell or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. So that's how I see it. Yeah, like, you got it. It's a good aggressive, you know, 2-drop to have out there, and that's what you want to play it as. And later on in the game, if you draw it, it's not a dead draw.
Yeah,
you know?
I think that this is a card that some people are going to play incorrectly in the fact that they won't cast it late in the game. Kind of like in certain matchups especially back in Standard and sometimes in Modern, the right play was just to cast Snapcaster Mage as a Ambush Viper and either block a Goblin Guide or attack a Planeswalker, so on and so forth, and you don't get any extra value, but the value of having it onto the battlefield that turn trumps, you know, holding on to it. This kind of feels like something along that line where I think a lot of people are going to overvalue that second ability, and they should just
play it as a 1/2 or
play it as a
2/1
prowess
two.
If they have no other plays. Yeah. Like, obviously, if you have another 2-drop that you can cast, cast that and then save this for a later turn. Because in all actuality, this could even say you kept a 2-land, 7, you know, 7-card hand, and you didn't see a third land on turn 3. You can cast this and hope to flip a land card and play that. But if you have no other 2-drop and you're an aggressive deck, I think that you should definitely drop this on turn 2 and then hope to utilize its prowess.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a skill tester card to see how people play it. It's set up so that people will play it wrong.
Agreed.
Unless they know they're doing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, agreed. Unless they have a firm understanding of what their deck's trying to do.
Yeah. Another one that was interesting was the Infinite Obliteration. Obliteration?
Yeah, know. That one's interesting. I think it's sideboard card at best.
Oh, yeah. It's like, again, like
it's like a really bad Surgical Extraction.
Yeah.
If you take away combo piece, I mean,
yeah, well, yeah, but surgical extraction can take away anything for less mana and at instant speed.
Yeah, but you have to have it in the graveyard, which is a big setup cost. Here, you could just you can it's for three. So, like, what was it? The Slaughter Games is the one that's probably the best one. But this is three, so this is a lot cheaper. A whole casting cost.
Somebody
makes it.
Playing music or something?
Oh.
Not that here.
No, there you go. What?
That was the weirdest thing. No joke. Like, while listening to Marcel talking about this card, the, like, CSI theme song, like the Who Are You song, started playing in my...
You had that much drinking tonight?
Man. No, like, I hope it comes out on the cast. Like, I really hope it comes through, but I don't think it will.
That's that 140 proof, so baby.
Yeah, no joke. Yeah, I guess you saw that tweet. Because I am, like, I'm on my third, I guess you can't call it a screwdriver, but it's orange juice and that stuff, and I am fucking hammered, but no joke, I just heard, like, the CSI theme song in my headphones, like, loud as fuck. While you were talking,
oh, you're picking up radio stations.
You're filling because it started out kind of like glitching in, and then it just did that "Who are you" part, and then stopped.
We have any non-magic material on the docket?
Yeah, as soon as we're done with this, we're gonna go to all non-magic.
We're almost through.
We got the spoilers, and then the quick thing that we need to hit on is the promos.
We'll try to fucking quicken this up because there's a few spoilers that I wanted to fucking ask about, I guess. We'll try to keep it short. Number one is, like, people were talking about, this is going back a couple days, but the Hallowed Moonlight. Do you guys feel like this is good, bad, yes, no? What are the merits to it?
I think in Modern that it'll see play as in the sideboard. Like, I was having a debate with somebody because they were talking about this being better than what's the commander card that came out recently, the priest, the one.
Oh, yeah, containment
priest. And they were trying to say, well, this, you know, is it draws a card, and, you know, I was trying to tell them, I was like, you know, the only merits over that this has over the containment priest is that it hits, you know, like token style creatures and whatnot. But the containment priest in Legacy is just so much stronger in the fact that it's a constant effect while it's out on the battlefield. You know, it can be equipped with, you know, a sword or a jit. It can be cheated into play off of a Aether Vial. You know, and Legacy, there's far less removal because Modern is such a creature-based format. You know, you got Bolts, Helix, Paths, you know, creature removal all over the place, Terminate. Whereas in Modern, or I mean in Legacy, that's far less common.
Also, Containment Priest is not playable in Modern, so this is like the Containment Priest.
Well, yeah, I mean, we were just, he was modern. Talking about the merits of it compared to Legacy, but I said, you know, that obviously this sees play in, like, sideboards of Modern, yeah. Especially if Gristleband keeps being a deck, and, you know, then you'll definitely see it. I honestly think that Rest in Peace is just going to be seeing more play in Modern because of decks like that, and whatnot, but
yes, but if anything, this has the potential to be an internal staple just based on the effect that it does. So yeah, if you wanted to,
it's hate against Twin. Like, I don't think it's like really hate against Twin because you can't hate on Twin. Like, from what I've, like, what are you gonna do? Even if you have like seven hate cards in your sideboard for Twin, you side them in when they're probably signing out some of their combo because, you know, like...
Yeah, this is like a one-turn reprieve against Twin. This isn't a good sideboard card for Twin. A good sideboard card for Twin is cards like Ghostly Prison and...
Things
like that, because then it still puts them under a lot of pressure, even if they've sideboarded out their combo. But this is a very good sideboard card for... you know, Gristleband and
Collective Company or what, like,
yes,
yeah,
exactly. It has other functions. This is, it just has like the ability to delay your your twin opponent for a turn if they if they're trying to go off. But either way, I think that it sees play in Modern. I think that Legacy, there's very, very narrow reasons why you would play this over the Containment Priest.
Cool. So next card. Kevin, yeah. What else is on your mind?
Okay. Yeah. There's a couple other ones. Like, Goblin Glory Chaser, I mean, that's not Goblin Guide, but, like, I feel like this has got some fucking balls to it. Goblin, do you guys have any fucking thoughts on this one, or is it just, like, am I missing something? It seems, it doesn't have haste.
It's a very, very good card in Standard.
But, yeah, it's definitely not Modern playable, but I think this has got, like, it's probably the Goblin Guidest you can get for Standard.
You're gonna have this, and then also the one that gets a plus one for each red creature that enters the battlefield.
Right.
So it's definitely gonna see play. It's definitely a decent card. Yeah.
That's right. That one wasn't a big one. That was one of the ones that kind of caught my eye as we were going through these. But the ones that, like, these were the ones that we talked about earlier that I wanted to talk about on the cast. But was it Molten Vortex and Magmatic Insight?
Oh, yeah. We talked about this for, like, 20 minutes before the cast.
Yes. We talked about it before the cast. I was like, we gotta fucking talk about these on
that
the cast.
That was when I was
this just wasted.
Yeah, that was when JR was all here.
All here.
To be fair, he's drinking Sierra Nevadas. I'm drinking 140 proof fucking Irish poteen.
But he's been doing that shit for a while before we got on.
I've
been here for a minute. I planned this though. I was just like, JR will come on, and then Marcel will come on later. And then we've got that nice smooth transition from East Coast to West Coast.
Oh, everything Marcel does is smooth.
Okay, we'll have JR on for a while doing his thing, having a good old time. And then JR might fall off a bit. And then Marcel will come in, and then fucking we'll just smooth transition. So, Molten Vortex, definitely, this got brought up to me because it's like, oh, Burn got some new toys. I'm like, yeah, Molten Vortex is not a Burn card. This just doesn't make the cut for a Burn deck. But like David was bringing up earlier, like this has a lot more value in like a mid-range deck, correct?
Combo, is that what you said, Marcel?
Yeah, something, you know, like with the, what was that, Assault?
Assault Formation.
Is it Assault Formation?
Oh, no, Seismic that? Assault, excuse me.
Yeah, Seismic Assault,
we
yeah.
We talked about that as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it'd be like a redundant copy of that.
We didn't do that on the cast.
This has an activation cost, but it comes down on turn one. It's much easier to cast than Seismic Assault. The other way that I've thought that this could be utilized was in kind of a control or mid-rangey deck, especially one that has like Life from the Loam or whatnot in it. As kind of a sideboard card for against like Affinity or Elves or little creature based decks, as an ability to just kill all their creatures, and then you can slowly start, if you draw too many lands, you can deal damage and whatnot. It's very well balanced, because I can't figure out whether it's really, really good or it's bad, or whether it's, you know, playable. I think definitely it's either a sideboard card or it's in some dedicated combo deck, like Marcel was talking about. Maybe it's in a deck like a Seismic Assault deck, and this is like a two of in it as kind of a pseudo replacement. I think that it could see play, but definitely not in Burn. Burn is never going to play this.
No,
but,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to play this in Burn.
This isn't what you want to be casting on turn one, and most of the time you're playing very few lands.
On turn anything, really. Like, if I'm having to fucking discard lands to deal two damage, like, and pay a red, like, it's just, like, paying one mana, it should be worth, like, optimally in a Burn deck, should be worth three damage. If it's on a stick, that's fine. Like, paying one red for two damage, that's cool. But, like, discarding a land for it on top of it, like, and having that dead fucking, that one land to cast this, even if it's not on turn one, but like having that dead land on turn two or turn three that I cast or that I tap to cast this, so that I can tap another red to deal 2 damage while also discarding a land card. That just doesn't, like, I don't play fucking, what's it called? I don't play, the, not Pyromancer, fucking, what the fuck is that card called? It is Pyromancer, not just, not Young Pyromancer, the other one. Why am I drawing a blank? It's like a burn staple. Fucking
Grim Lavamancer? Is that what you're talking
about? Lavamancer, that's what I'm thinking of. I don't even play that card because it's not fast enough. Sorry, I've been drinking. And I don't play that card.
You?
I mean, I sideboard it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can go to a general consensus that this is not a burn card, that right, this is right, like right. Some
all right, there we go. So now
the other one
in.
Is Magnetic Insight.
The one that I do care about. I think it merits fucking testing. Feel like this might be where like I pull out Humble Defector or Bob depending on which one I'm using for card draw. I don't like having fucking creatures on the ground. I don't like having to fucking deal with fucking whether you can block them or not. I would rather just put the damage across to your face. And this to me seems better. I mean, there's downsides to it. You know, somebody brought up, they're like, oh yeah, it gets remanded. That's a son of a bitch. Yeah. But I mean, like a lot of spells suck if they get countered. So like to me, this is the biggest problems that I come up with in my game plan. Like, it's put everything across your face as fast as I can. My downside to my deck is I don't, like, I either draw too many lands or, like, you know, or I run out of gas. And this kind of fixes both of those problems. It's like, hey, if I've got an extra fucking land card in my hand, I, like, because once I get to 3, I don't need to cast any more fucking lands. When I'm, it's a little different when I'm playing, like, you know, when I bring black into the equation and I'm playing fucking Bump in the Night and fucking Bob. But if this is replacing Bob, I can find a replacement for Bump in the Night and go back to red-white. If I'm just playing red-white, like, I feel like this replacing Humble Defector is a good idea. Because, you know, so far, just looking at it, you know, because drawing 2 cards for 1 mana and tossing a land that I don't need because, I mean, shit, like, I look at it like this, too. I run Shard Volley, and I can sack a land. Like, I tend to save those for late game so I can end the fucking game. But it's like, okay, well, if I've got that 4th land in hand, and I can play that, and then I can sack it to fucking Shard Volley to fucking finish the game off, fucking sweet. If I don't have that fucking Shard Volley to finish the game off, or you're not quite done yet, I can sack that land to this fucking card, and then I draw 2 cards off of it. Maybe I go from 18 to 19 lands if I'm running this, and definitely not a fucking full book of them. Like maybe 2 or maybe 3. I don't know about 3. Probably 2, maybe 3 of these might replace Bob or Humble Defector.
I would say you should definitely try that just because, yeah, 1 casting cost is very cheap, and you could just throw that in there, and especially you could sequence it to the end of your turn, and that way you don't have to worry about remand as much.
Exactly.
And yeah, and then everything you're saying makes complete sense. Like, you know, it gets rid of lands when you don't need them. It helps you get gas when you need gas. I can see it being a little awkward in some instances, but I think that's going to be far and few.
Those are minimal. It's like, you know, you don't want to put cards in your deck to deal with that weird corner case scenario. Like, this seems like the only problems I have in my deck are these. Like, I've got too many lands or I don't have enough cards. All right. Sweet. Well, this kind of does it for me. I wanted to bring those up on the cast so that, like, so I could learn how to play fucking Magic better. But also for, you know, people like Rico and the Heavy Meta Midget that also want to hear these things.
So, JR, you got something you want to talk about before we move on to non-Magic shit?
I don't think JR did. I think David had one more thing that he wanted to bring up.
I want the CSI bullshit to go away. That's what I want. I don't know what the fuck's going on. Like, while you were talking, it happened again, and I'm, like, going through, like, my tabs. Like, is there, like, some sort of, like, advertisement going on, or what the fuck is going on?
Turn around and make sure your TV's not on.
It's not. Like, nothing else is on other than my fucking fan.
I hope it comes across on the cast. I just know it won't, and I'm going to sound like a fucking drunken psychopath.
I had to take my headphones off to make sure that there wasn't some random CSI music playing in this room, and it is dead silent in here. So.
No, it wasn't, because it's coming through my headset clear as day. Like, it's really, really weird. Anyway, now that I sound like a fucking crazy person, there's a ton of cards in this set that deserve to be talked about. Like, we touched briefly on Despoiler of Souls. There's the Scab Clan Berserker that seems like it could be pretty strong.
Yeah, you touched on a lot of stuff, David. You talk about a lot of the cards. Let JR speak.
Wow, Marcel, why do you hate me so much?
No, I'm just trying to keep you in your envelope so that way you can be the best host that you can be.
Yeah, sure. If you wanna call that hate that, then do that.
Don't we have any Twitter hole questions tonight?
Yeah, JR's about to go to sleep. We need to get the Twitter hole going. Let's go.
JR's been like scraping the bottom edge.
I thought you were gonna rally.
I'm rallying now. All right. Okay, getting that rally on.
Because honestly, nobody's submitted.
Gotta get that rally on.
Nobody has submitted Twitter hole stuff, but there are a few things that we do need to talk about.
One thing, if you want to go to the classic.
Seriously, I'm listening to CSI right now. That's all I hear.
Classic Chandra. Liliana thing, like. Liliana's an undead. She's nasty, right? She's like an old.
She's nasty.
Who's like, you have to be careful with that. So, but nonetheless, Liliana
is hot. She's undead, but she's hot.
Especially the young Liliana, which is really pale. She's walking with those ravens and shit. Yeah, yeah. That's a good one. So,
I agree. Is that where? What the fuck is that? Are you just playing shit into our fucking?
That wasn't me.
Now?
That was not me.
No, yeah, I had to do that.
Okay, I was like, that one's not me. What the fuck?
That isn't a CSI theme song that I know. What the fuck was that?
What was that?
That was supposed
to. I heard shit coming through.
Oh my god. I mean, obviously that was Marcel fucking with us.
Well, I don't know what theme song that is.
All right, well, anyway. But do you know the song I'm talking about? The Who Are You? Who?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what keeps playing in my fucking headset. It's bullshit.
Hey, at least it's not Taylor Swift. So you're doing all right.
I hear Taylor Swift quite often. I have two little girls, and they love the T-Swizzle.
Oh, god.
I'm glad that they don't like Justin Bieber. That's what I'm happy about.
Whoa,
are you a Justin Bieber fan?
To victory. No, I mean, that's a good thing. Like, you know, no Bieber, but it's also understandable because that dude, like, I don't know, it was like 2 years ago, a year or two ago, that guy got fucking arrested for some other shit and nobody cares about the guy anymore. Doesn't release albums. So thankfully that scourge got erased from the earth.
Or at least is not paid attention to. But there are a couple things before we get into like all non-magic talk. One of the big things, though, is
did I say anything bad yet? Did I talk any shit on anyone?
No, JR.
I think I talked shit on someone or something.
No, that was precast. That was precast, okay. But you're fine. Okay. That won't see the light of day.
I got nervous for a second.
But there's a guy that everybody needs to go check out. Look at his stuff. He's gonna be sending Kevy a Rakdos abacus. It looks badass. I'll probably.
It looks awesome.
Like once I maul Kevy for the lightning bolt.
What are you gonna start fighting me for? Like, you're gonna have to announce when you come in the room. You're like, okay, we're fighting for this now.
Well, I'm just gonna do it all in one big swipe
and just take it all.
Yeah,
take it all. Oh,
figure that'll save you a lot of pain, a lot of me, a lot of time. I'll just get it all.
I gotta start loading my guns before you come over.
But he's at nvenom8_designs on Twitter. He makes some high-end, handmade, really, really nice stuff. Go and check him out. I think he's working on some actual, like, kind of Kraken-inspired dice.
He was going to do Kraken dice, but then he found out that it was just going to be way too...
It's really complicated, but I guess he's working on another design. He's gonna try and make it work, but he's not sure because how complicated it is, which... I mean,
but from what I've seen from this guy, his shit is fucking awesome. Like, if you go to his fucking Twitter and you just see, like, the dice in his fucking little, like, cover photo at the top, it's like, holy shit, those are fucking awesome.
Yeah. I mean, he makes some really nice stuff, so go and check his stuff out. Support him if you can. He's pretty badass. He's, like you said, he's working on some pretty cool stuff. He's trying to make the Kraken dice happen, whether that happens or not. He's still working on it. So give him a shout out.
It's at nvenom8_designs.
Yeah, N as in the letter, venom8_designs. And before we get away from Magic completely, also, you know, it's worth mentioning that the next 2 months of FNM, you are going to be wanting to go and trying to win those promos because July is Path to Exile and August is Semen Visions, Serum Visions.
Mm-hmm.
These aren't your run-of-the-mill, like, crap standard, you know, promo cards. These are modern playable staples that you're going to want to get your greedy mitts on, so.
Yep.
Make sure that happens. I know I'll be getting my set.
Semen Visions.
Yeah, Semen
Visions.
Especially Semen Visions.
Gotta love it. all right, so now we can get into, you know, happy time with non-magic with Marcel.
Awesome. Yay!
Ladies and gentlemen, cats and dogs, pigs with wigs, and everything else in between, we're now moving to the segment that everyone likes. This is the non-magic segment. We can't talk about magical cards in a form, fashion that means anything relevant.
Wait, we can reference them, right, as jokes?
We can reference them, but we can't have them in a form or fashion that talks about anything that's as a serious magic play, as in tournament talk, anything in that direction. If you do, you will be exiled from the cast.
Gotcha.
Source of exile.
Exactly.
Eat a dick.
All right, hey, I actually do have one
perfect example.
One Twitter hole question that's from tonight. All right.
Oh shit.
Our Scottish brethren, Alec Gbot, he wants to know, it's the Salmon Ball World Finals in Ridge Crest. Who is in the top 8?
Definitely JR, definitely Kevy, cuz they're savants in the game. I would say Proxy would be in there. Yeah, Proxy, Xenagos, me. Who else was there? Mildy would have to fly back out.
I feel like we, like, David, myself, and Zen all have, like, a, you know, a place in it because I don't know if we're going to be able to fill this thing up. Like,
well,
it's
we got
Ridgecrest.
7 right there with me. Yeah, no, maybe that's 8. Let's see. We said...
That's 8 with you. Yeah, Mildy and then you'd be 8.
Yeah. So I
even though David didn't play,
but I'm fucking badass. I'll whoop the shit, and plus I'm from the Crest. I'm fucking handle
whoop the
my
shit.
Business.
No, like I feel like he like David would get top 8 like anyway because like you know he's pretty good at things. You know he's not fucking you know just a slack jawed idiot. Like he's pretty good at things, and he could probably pick Salmon Ball up enough to be like in the top 8 if we were doing this in Ridgecrest. I mean, maybe because he has no experience in the game, if we were doing, like, a top 8 Vegas thing again, and, like, you know,
Did you guys even have 8 people playing?
No, not at all.
So, obviously, there are going to be people in the top 8 that did not play previously, and I'm just saying,
I think we had 8 people playing total.
Oh, total, yeah,
games.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, this is just a start to say who will be in the top 8 yet. We haven't, we got to get more games in. Hopefully, I got the.
Yeah.
I've been trying to talk to the guy to get the Salmon Ball, the original Salmon Ball, in our hands, and it's been
not the smoothest
experience.
That seems like a fucking a huge pain in the ass. Because didn't you say the guy wanted like $200 for that croquet set that we broke?
Yeah, and he and he will not budge. So it's basically some people are dropping some money in. Tommy, he dropped some money in, and I think someone else said they'll drop some, so we'll get
the...
I get
getting the fucking, like, trying to get the fucking original Salmon Ball set, and that's cool as, a collector's item, but, like, wouldn't it be a better endeavor to get, like, the official Salmon Ball set? Maybe it's not the one that we, you know, started using, but, like, just to get a fucking... A cricket set, and then deck that thing out like crazy. You're spending $230 on that. But, I mean, we could just deck the fuck out of that shit.
We could, but I thought about this, and I was like, you know, it's always, if we do that, and then all of a sudden we go far with the Salmon Ball, we're gonna have this sinking rock in the back of your head, like, man, what if we would have had our hands on the original Salmon Ball? And that $200, mm-hmm. Maybe 5 years down the line, we'd be like, why the fuck didn't we just spend the $200? You know, it seemed like a lot of money, but I think this long term that it has the potential that would be just well worth the dollars spent.
Hey, and this motherfucker is our financial genius for this cast. So we know he knows moto cards. He knows he knows magic cards and like long term investment.
And he knows where it's.
JR, is this a sound business? Do you think that $200 is too much? Is it extortion price? Should we scummage to that? Or
eventually, they're going to get broken, and the person who breaks them is going to feel bad. Like the person who eventually someone's going to go the question is they're gonna get broken.
I feel like the only value to having the original Salmon Ball kit is to put it in like a trophy box somewhere. Yeah. Like if there's ever some sort of heavy meta headquarters some SVU headquarters somewhere where you could put this like the Grand Poobah could come up and fucking kiss it at the beginning of the meeting. Like I get that.
Honestly, this could be the heavy meta's version of what's it in the league? What is their trophy called?
Oh god damn it, what is it?
It's fucking that chick's name.
Yes.
It's an Indian name.
Yes. Damn it, you're killing me because I know this.
I got a murder boner.
But yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
that could be our version of that.
Well, see, the most important honestly, to get out of this is the actual Salmon Ball itself.
Yeah.
You would take that and put it in a glass.
Yeah, the Salmon Ball is the biggest one because it's an orange ball.
If someone just taken the Salmon Ball from the site, no one would have ever noticed.
Nobody would have noticed
the Salmon Ball.
Yeah, I know. Why didn't we think about that? I don't know.
Because we're honorable people.
Yeah, I don't think the people that you're negotiating with realize that, half of those fucking shits is broken, and they're all weather-worn, and, one of them we broke. I mean, it's barely a croquet set at this point, but they're like, oh, you want it? That's $200, motherfucker.
Yeah. But see, I offered him, I was like, I'll give you $50 for just the Salmon Ball itself, just the orange ball, and, then mm-hmm. he wouldn't have to worry about, maybe his owner finding out or whatever it is, because I think he's being a little unscrupulous about it, but whatever. And he wouldn't bite on that. He's like, no, the whole set or none. So, he knows how to play his hardball.
That's the thing. That's his business. And he's just like, and he has to know that. He's like, you know how many other fucking crazy Vegas experiences had to happen in that house other than ours? I mean, this is a magic community. This is shit we've talked about. But you know what? I bet you there's people before in that fucking house that have been all, man, if all I could take is the eight ball or the cue ball from the fucking pool table, which we used that for was to sign shit on.
That is a lie. Pool was played that weekend.
Because
I remember one of the people got dropped off and he said, the cab driver was like, where the hell, what was this address? And he finally arrived there and said, oh, I've been to this house before. This is the party house. So,
It sure is. And hey, a shower door got broken, a glass shower door got broken while we were there. And then we realized, half a day later, that the same thing had to have happened before in the downstairs bathroom because it only had one shower door. None of us questioned the fact that glass shower doors normally roll in twos. and they slide back and forth. But the downstairs shower only had one, and we never thought anything about it until the one upstairs got broken. And we're like, oh, I think this has happened before. Yeah, I feel like a lot of weird... I feel like a lot of weird shit's happened in that house. So the guy that, like, the broker that you're talking to is just all, oh, man, you want that fucking orange croquet ball? That's going to cost you at least $200, motherfucker. Because
you want it.
A lot of epic shit happens in this house, and you want it that bad. You'll pay for it if you want it that bad. Yeah. That's the business we need to get into.
And this is the weird part. Go ahead.
Videotapes, like when we were out in the backyard, I don't know if it was Jackie or Robot or Proxy who shot them.
Oh yeah,
like it was
the
funny
from the distance video.
Yeah, and it looked like the Zapruder. Like it was just like so funny because, like, to be honest, like we were completely wrecked in those videos, but like we looked so calm. Like it was just, like that one video where it's like me and Marcel were like just like so orderly, just like. Yep, I'm taking my hit now. I'm taking yep. And at that point, that was like
that was like
11 o'clock in the morning. We were like trash, and we just like looked like so calm there. We were just like
that was the beautiful part, and that's honestly why that was the beautiful part about that game, and that's why I thought we should try to figure something out with a croquet set that was in the backyard. I was like, all right. We've done enough of the degenerate shit that we've done. We are fucking hammered. We should try to act classy for a minute. Even if it's, you know, ass o'clock in the morning and there's no reason for us to be awake. And we're not classy because we're a bunch of drunk magic players. But we should act classy because there's a croquet kit in the backyard. I was like, we should figure out how to fucking do this. And then we realized we didn't know how to play croquet, so we made up our own rules. But... it's like that was part of it. Like, you couldn't just fucking be there and be like, oh, hey, I'm gonna hit a ball. It was like, we should act classy as fuck, and we should like stand here and have conversations about, like, you know, the direction the line of the ball is gonna go, and, you know, whether there's gonna be some backspin on it, and, you know, oh, maybe we should go around this way, and have some very serious conversations about it, which turned into a sport in itself. It's fucking amazing that you can let a bunch of drunk people hang out together and you have a whole new sport.
Yeah, it was transcendent. It's truly transcendent.
It's really early.
What we should really do late. Is stop. What we should do is stop fucking with that. Stop fucking with, like, Magic Card Finance and start fucking with Salmon Ball Finance. We should start buying these croquet kits from... like, you know how people do altars of magic cards and shit? We should start buying these croquet kits from Walmart for, like, you know, $25 a pop. And then, like, I'll paint the sons of bitches black and just put fucking red mana symbols all over them. Like, fucking... yeah. Custom and then they'll be... set. Yeah. We'll get our fucking croquet fucking sets going on.
And we'll sell those for $200.
Exactly! Yeah. And then we'll raise the money to buy the original... and then continue to raise money for further Salmon Ball endeavors. And, like, what we really need out of all of this is, like, a case of, like, salmon Krylon paint. So that, like, when you, like, you know, just Krylon spray paint. So when you buy, like, your croquet set, the first thing you have to do is take the orange ball out and paint it salmon, which is not really going to be much of a difference. It's just going to look like it's faded in the sun.
What was the other color you're debating? It was salmon, or what was the other? It's like you're debating between two different colors.
Light orange or something.
No, it was like another, like, name for it. It was like a...
I don't remember, to be honest with you. I remember salmon is what it ended up. Yeah, mandarin. I was just really upset that it wasn't orange. It was just like this weird sun faded orange. And to me at the time, it was like, I was like, okay, we've got blue, we've got red,
yeah,
we've got yellow.
I agree.
We've got primary colors. But this was like, that ball's not orange. That's salmon colored. Like, that's a whole different.
It
there's
like
some
weird,
random patch colored ball. And it, like, and that's why it stood out. And that's why it's called salmon.
That's why it's ball, ugly. Like, no one picked it.
We all decided it. We all decided it was the It was the ugly ball that nobody wanted, and then it became the most powerful ball in the fucking game.
Oh, wow. It's like a a fairy tale all in one. The day the Salmon Ball transcended.
I'm telling you. All sorts of crazy shit happened.
See, I'm really nervous, though. Because I'm nervous the next time that we play this, you know, we're going to be like, wow, but why did we think this was good? It's one of those, you know, those drunken talks.
I feel your pain. If I hadn't have, like, woken up from my coma and saw you guys outside still playing Salmon Ball, like, 2 days later, and using the pool as a water hazard, like, I would have thought, like, hey, maybe we were just all on that level at some point, and, like, yeah, this was fucking awesome. There was sober as fuck people. Like, there's people like Proxy and Robot. They were loving it. And then, like, 2 days later, I woke up from a coma, and, like, Xenagos is playing with you guys on the other side of the pool with a cape on and just having a good time. And, like, this transcends all that shit. Like, this is – the game was fun as shit, and I feel like you just need to be in the right place to play it. Like, the next time you're, you know, going to a GP and you're like, oh, hey, we might have some time to kill – you know, of course, you and your friends get together and you get a hotel room or whatever. You might want to pay more attention to what kind of lawn they have. And you might want to bring a croquet set or just buy one when you get there. That's the best part about, like, Salmon Ball is all it really takes is a croquet set, which, I mean, nobody wants to fucking spend $50 to fucking, like, tag that as a bag and fucking throw it to the bottom of the plane. Just go to Walmart when you get there, and it costs you like $20. And then get there and start your own goddamn Salmon Ball game, and then I guarantee you there's going to be a few people that decide the main event's not that big of a deal.
Well, we're going to do this at GP Kevy. Or GP Crest. Or how
GP Crest. GP Crest, son.
Are you going to fly out, JR? So.
Yeah, you need to have, like, some hills there. I need to see some, like, some hazards and stuff. I need some ants.
We got sand traps out there, huh?
We can go to different places. In my backyard, I've got some advanced terrain we could deal with. If we're going to do GP, like, fucking Kevy's back room, I'm going to have to fucking... I got to save up some money. Just like you guys are going to have to. I have to save up some money to send my wife to, like, Oregon to go see her family. And we'll just take this place over. I'll be like, oh, babe, you and Brody can go, and you can go visit your mom, and it'll be awesome. You guys have it. Here, baby, it's on me. And then I'll put my money into the GP in that form. And then everybody else can fly here or drive here or do whatever. And then since my wife's gone, like, I mean, shit, like, I got places for the fucking close-knit people to stay. And then, like, it's not like Vegas. Like, oh, man, I had to fucking get a hotel room. It would cost me $150 a night, and it's like a 30-minute drive to the fucking GP house. No, we're in Ridgecrest. I can see the hotel from my front yard, and it'll cost you $45 a night. Like, if you want to stay if you want to stay at the Marriott on the other side of town, that'll take you about 4 minutes to 6 minutes to get here by cab.
Marriott in Ridgecrest.
Yeah, we got a Marriott. Oh, well, there's a base right next to it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that come here on travel to go to the base, so we have...
I think that's, like, our biggest tourist attraction in Ridgecrest is the fact that we have hotels. Because a lot of people have to come here from the base anyway, so, like, we have hotels that are decent. Like, if you really want to come to the desert, I mean, all right. So we got some nice hotels here, and you could stay in those, and if you really want to, you could go to Death Valley, which most people don't want to do that. It seems like Europeans want to go to Death Valley. Most people in America are like, why would I want to go to Death Valley? That's terrible.
What I was just thinking.
But it's not too far from here.
Great. Awesome.
Yeah, it's not too far from here. So if you're coming all the way here from Europe, I mean, shit, you might as well check it out. But I can tell you, it looks just like Ridgecrest with less people. I mean, like, that's what Death Valley is.
I mean, Germans, you don't like those Germans, they like their Death Valley, they're like, yeah, da, more, blah, blah. whatever whatever Death Valley is in it's probably like
whatever Death Valley is in German.
Todd Bada.
But yeah, I feel like we
yes.
a serious fucking salmon ball tournament here.
We got to do this. We're gonna make it happen. So JR, you gotta plan for some vacation time.
You can fly out
to San Francisco and spend a day here, and then we'll drive down there.
Yeah, man. Mm-hmm. We need to like plan some serious water hazards and so forth.
I will fill my fucking. I will fill up the potholes in my backyard with water. We'll call it a pool. Fuck it.
We need a hoop or a flaming hoop.
We need to get Ryan in there. Ryan needs to like stay in there and like get the balls when they come in. That was so exciting. There were only two water hazard balls, but like Ryan happened to be swinging in the pool like during that, and he's just like, "Yeah, man, I get that." Oh man.
See, what happened was this. No, see, the original water, the penalty was that you had to jump into the pool to get the salmon ball out of there. So no one came close to hitting the ball into the pool. But then when Ryan was nearby and he said he'll just get the pool out the water there, all of a sudden there's a lot more salmon balls actually made it into the water. So that's what happened. The threat of jumping in the pool was too much for people to take that chance.
Oh, it was so exciting though, man. The first time a ball went in the pool. Woo!
Oh, salmon ball. Oh, Jesus. So there was our salmon ball segment for the evening.
We're going to force it down your throats until you guys buy it from us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm going to start doing salmon ball altars. I'm gonna start taking a Sharpie and just drawing, like, you know those Kevy Metal fucking MS Paint characters? That's probably the same quality of artwork you're gonna get on a ball with a Sharpie. And so if you guys like that, like, I will start drawing that shit on the fucking salmon ball for you.
Start today. Get ready. People will be hitting you up.
Get your own custom ass fucking salmon ball set.
Kevy Metal approved salmon balls. These balls were handled by Kevy.
I'm gonna start bringing like jars of salmon eggs, like when you go fishing. Like, I'm gonna start bringing jars of salmon eggs to GPs and signing them for people. Oh Jesus! So, was there any other things that we had to talk about tonight? Yeah,
I feel like I had some stuff to talk about, but. Not per se.
Bring it up.
I figured out where that fucking shit was coming from.
Where was it?
If you scroll all the way down on Mythic Spoilers, they have this like advertisement thing. And apparently one of them is not on mute when it comes on my computer.
Sons of bitches.
Yeah.
Mythic
Spoiler was trolling me all cast. Like, who the fuck is watching CSI?
Oh, son of a bitch.
Oh, so funny.
They've been letting themselves go. Like, you know, they're like, oh, hey, we're going to let the Modern Master spoiler run. And, like, everybody's like, oh, man, well, I had a lot more fucking faith in Mythic Spoiler than that. And then now they're just like, hey, we're running CSI ads. Fucking, you know, you can buy fucking croquet sets from our site. Like, it don't even fucking matter. Like,
well, what's funny is, like, it's all the way down at the bottom. Like, normally if you have a advertisement thing like that, it's, like, right in the top area where you're forced to see it at least a little bit.
Right.
When you log on. Not this one. It's all business up top, and then downstairs is where they got this going on. So I was like, freaking out because it started going on like a third or fourth time. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? I'm losing my mind. So I just closed all the tabs, and as soon as I closed Mythic Spoiler, it shut off in the middle of the song. So,
no, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, so I opened it back up and scrolled all the way down. Sure enough, there's this fucking advertisement thing that just keeps cycling through different like movies and show like advertisements. And yeah.
Christ.
So,
oh, I love
I'm not batshit crazy. I was hearing the fucking CSI theme music.
You were hearing it, but it wasn't through one of us.
No, I didn't know. I didn't think it was through one of you because it was like coming through my headphones. It wasn't like.
Yeah, you did. You had to act as a
You're just like, I think it was.
God, Marcel, I thought we were friends. You hate well, me you, so
you,
much.
You accused us. You're like, who's playing CSI music in the background?
I asked. I didn't say one of you motherfuckers is doing it.
You commanded one of us.
Now I know why Marcel hates me. It's going back to that cast when I just like bossed him around.
I am not a crash dummy.
I get it now. I'm sorry, Marcel. I apologize.
I won't do what you tell me, motherfucker. Hey,
I need to find some groupies.
You're such a good roving reporter, though.
Where are the magic groupies?
Where are the magic groupies?
Where are the magic groupies at?
Oh, I got an interesting question. I got the only Twitter poll question I've got tonight from Corny Adams, Knife City. What magic card would make the best album title, and what genre of music would it be? That'll give us something to chew on for a little bit.
Oh, geez,
what magic card makes the best album title, and what kind of music would it be?
Oh, man.
I think I've already thought about this, and I think the answer has to be... I mean, you guys might come up with something better, but I think Dark Ritual, and it has to be like black metal. Like Swedish black metal, and it has to be called Dark Ritual.
Swedish black metal. Wow, that was very specific.
Oh, that's a thing. Like,
I didn't say it wasn't. I just said that's specific as fuck.
No, it's very specific, but it's a lot less specific than you'd think. Like, there's black metal, which, I mean, is like a big part of metal. But, like, Swedish black metal is just bigger than most of it. Like, it's just Swedish black metal. They like burning churches. They like fucking doling on the makeup and fucking... And they hate everybody. So
that's like
I think
the what 1% of Sweden that isn't very nice. It's like the angry people in Sweden. They gotta go and like form metal bands. That's how like rejected they are.
Dude, I'm telling you, Google Swedish black metal and see how much bigger it is.
I'm not arguing. I'm just saying like most of Sweden is known for being like really nice and happy, and like that's like their outcast.
No.
What?
Aren't they most known for like just IKEA? Like half of the country is IKEA and half the country is Swedish black metal.
No, I think it's
divided straight down the middle.
Oh my god!
But the normal public only chooses to acknowledge IKEA. They're like, IKEA, that's all that shit that comes from Sweden. They're like, no, there's the burning churches black metal fucking crowd too.
Holy shit.
Oh. Mm. I got one.
So, if you've got a card that is like the best fucking album title, what genre would it be? And what is the card?
See, I got a card that has the album title and the cover all in one.
Ooh.
It would be Ad Nauseam. And the guy in there, he looks insanely crazy. He looks like he has a bunch of records piled up. So, you can imagine he's a DJ. And so Ad Nauseam, he's playing some kind of house music, the same fucking beat for the entire record.
Over and over. Hey,
and
yeah.
And he's DJing until his hands falls off. So now he's got these little nubs on there. So there you go.
That's fucking sweet. That's a good one.
I guess maybe I'm not on like the metal band side of it, but like I think like...
Hey, it doesn't matter what genre it is.
JR, do you got one?
What's the question? What's going on? Cheris is trying to eat his Triscuits. He's trying to live.
Hey, what flavor are they?
Just salt. Like salt, man.
Salt flavor, man.
Not like weak, free 1950s salt. Like,
we don't have rosemary's flavored. No, it's just salt flavored.
Yeah. I'm not trying to live here. I need some salt. Just want to die.
Oh, man. All right, well, since JR is just on his Triscuit binge trying to die, like murder by, like suicide by Triscuits.
Trying to die from salt bloating.
Like the best one that I could think of is Threads of Disloyalty. I think that would be a badass fucking...
That is a sweet name. I like that.
Right? I think that would be bad. I don't even know, like, the genre. I'm not good at... Like, that would... I think that would have to be, like, a punk... punk band.
Music.
What?
Yeah, that...
The strings of disloyalty.
Threads.
Threads. I mean, you can get really dark, angsty fucking harp music, like where they're just all playing minor notes and shit.
Yeah.
And just call it Friendship and Loyalty.
Dark, angsty harp music. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Which is a nice precursor to Swedish black metal.
Yeah, it's like your angry fucking teenager that like has been forced to play the harp left and right from his mother.
I think I'm gonna stick with
and he's just like he's a bow 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 doo 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 bow 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 on his harp.
How is that a harp?
So it's like bung 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 bung. And hey, you can get all fucking deep and angsty on that shit. You can get deep and angsty on anything.
Holy shit. You can get deep and angsty on anything.
Oh yeah, you can. No, but if you look at it though, like Magic cards in general could be awesome fucking album names. There's all sort of like random ones don't make any sense. You could be like, oh, Hunt Master of the Fells. Like Barstool Saints, Hunt Master of the Fells. People are like, that sounds sweet.
No, fucking Barstool, like, Barstool Saints entreat the angels.
Exactly. Rain, I mean, there's
Rain like, of Gore. Holy shit.
We have songs called Zombie. We have a song called Blood Moon. Like, there's already Magic card titles in there. Like song titles. I mean, you just name the whole album like, you know, fuck Affinity.
The O2 drop album.
No shit. Hey,
when's your album drop? O2.
Yeah. O2, son. No, I think the only problem with the O2 drop album is if I were to like if my you know bandmates were be like, oh, where did that come from? I'm like, oh, well, like you guys remember that show in Oakland, and then I get hit again.
Just feel like you pissed off about that.
Well, forever. I wouldn't say they're still pissed off about it. I would say they're still unhappy about it. I had a blast. Fuck them.
I know you did. I did too. I could tell. I could tell they were ready to get the fuck out of there at the moment.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, I mean, they're like none of them are Magic players. Like, you know, Jason played Magic back in the day and doesn't really understand it and doesn't care. And the rest of my band does not give a fuck about Magic at all. But dragging them from here to fucking Oakland to play a show while everybody is playing Magic while we're playing our show was just, it was like the nail in the coffin for them. I was having a blast. I was having all sorts of fun. I was hanging out with homies. I basically just went to a GP. But I also had my band with me so I could play a show at the end of it and be like, oh, check it out. This is what I do. And they were like, oh, you're an asshole. And we all had to pay for this. Oh, good time. So I've got another question. Oh, Zero Layfield.
Nope. You can't ask it. You can't ask it.
Oh man, I gotta get off, guys. I'm sorry.
Oh wait, I guess you can ask it. Marcel's going, so we can talk Magic.
Yeah.
That's, Marcel, I mean, thanks for coming on.
Sorry to let you guys down, man. I'm
thanks
sorry.
For coming on and making fun of me and whatnot. Appreciate it.
I'm sure it'll happen again soon.
Yeah. Maybe I'll get drunk enough to boss you around and yell.
Maybe. We'll see what happens. I mean, Marcel's got responsibilities ahead of him.
Not really. I mean, I I'm just going to follow Kevy Metal suit and minimize my responsibilities.
Yeah, you might have to start playing modern is basically what it comes down to.
Yeah, exactly. Like, hey, standard man. What? Huh? No.
Yeah, fuck standard. I got a kid. I'm just going to play modern. It's easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's more important? You know?
What's more important? Standard cards or my kid? And then people are like, oh, shit. I'm sorry. I feel like an asshole now. You're like, yeah, I'm going to play modern. I'm going to spend more money on the cards. But I'm going to be able to keep those cards for a while.
Exactly. That's the key. That's the key part there. You can play it later on. That's why I got a cube, so that way I could just play with that.
Oh, speaking of cube, oh man, David's cube. Oh, it's gross. It's all shiny. The whole goddamn thing. It's gross.
Hey, so like, we're gonna make this happen. We gotta make this happen.
I had to play David's cube the other day.
Really?
Should I just end this cast right now?
Well, yeah. I, well.
Swords and plowshares, eat a dick! Let the good times roll. Let them knock you around. Let the good times roll. Let them make you a clown. Let them leave you up in the air. Let them brush you rock and roll. And let the good times roll. Here's the after talk. Fuck you guys. You don't want to listen to this podcast. Exactly.
Who wants to listen to this bullshit?
This is the worst podcast. I'd rather be scratching nails on a chalkboard than doing this.
God.
I was much more iridescent before we started.
Yes, you are.
When we started, I got tired. Sorry.
Can that be the name of the podcast? I was much more resistant before I started.
No, but that I did change his. I am changing his little blurb after his Twitter handle right now.
Because, like, as of right now, I had it at Time Elemental. Did JR say something bad? Now it's going to be, I was much more iridescent before the cast.